That's the wrong show. Over to you, David.
Welcome to Synthaholics. This is your host, David Duncan, and you heard Holly and Michelle loud and clear. And we also have Aaron O'Brien, of course,
hello.
As always.
Meow. Hello.
Are you a kitty?
I'm a little kitty.
Do you need to suck on a titty?
Give me some milk.
Skirt, skirt, skirt. Welcome, guys. I hope you haven't turned it off yet. We do have Star Trek to talk about.
Please.
There's been a lot of kitty talk before.
Kitty?
And titty.
Oh, yes, before we started rolling. I was recalling a Mardi Gras story, which was interesting.
Well, let's move on to what our subject is.
Yeah, let's not talk about
your
that.
Escapades into debauchery.
Adventures in New Orleans. No. Holly has finished Star Trek Discovery.
I have.
And there's no real news. I mean, I saw Anson Mount getting his hair done to look like Pike.
He got his hair did.
His hair did. I saw that on the Twitters.
Nice.
But I'm going to make a bold prediction because we're recording on a Sunday night. I'm guessing Monday morning we'll have some Star Trek news, and then we'll release the podcast as normal on Tuesday, and we won't be talking about that news because the magic of podcasts.
Yes. Well, we do know for sure that you can see us all. Well, except Holly, I'm sorry. We will be at the Nickel City Con in Buffalo.
Yeah, but past guests...
I'll be
guests,
there in spirit.
Yeah. Past guest Robbie Palmer, he'll be there.
Mm-hmm.
Chris Chavez, he's also a past guest. He will also be there.
Pete Herr will be there.
Pete Herr, also past guest, will be there.
Adam Herr,
past guest, will be
people.
There. Josiah Leroy, also past guest.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe Trevor, I don't know. I haven't talked to him.
I haven't talked to Trevor
in a while.
I don't
know if he'll be there, but there will be other Geekiverse people there, most assuredly.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I'll be there.
Most assuredly.
And,
I have my table, my art table, so you can see me in Artist Alley.
I will be roaming.
Do it.
I'll
see.
I'll be roaming with my recorder to talk with people who look like they like Star Trek.
Y'all and can look for me.
But you won't be there.
But I will.
We'll have a cardboard cut out of you, Holly.
That's a great idea.
Bring out your Holly. Bring out your Holly.
But Dave, why don't you let them...
Cosplay as me.
Yeah, I know, right? We'll cosplay
Holly. Give me your shirt. I'll fit into it real good.
Right?
Dave, why don't you let everyone know what you're doing?
Oh, yes.
Other than just...
Tell them.
He's going to tell.
I'm going to be doing a couple panels. Most importantly, we're doing a podcast panel, which me, Aaron, Chris Chavez, and Robbie Palmer will most likely be part of.
Mm-hmm.
Chris might even bring Anthony Mullen along if Anthony Mullen's going to be there. I don't know. I'm hoping so. So that'll be fun. Yep. But I will also be moderating some celebrity panels. I will be talking with Barbara Eden on Friday. Who's I Dream of Jeannie.
Yes.
And she had a prestigious movie career before Fox decided to shit the bed with Cleopatra.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of laid her off, and she went back to TV, and I Dream of Jeannie was a fantastic show.
Come on, man. I really just knew her from I Dream of Jeannie, and you had me at...
I Dream of Jeannie. Yeah.
Blink. Yes, yes. The fantasies of many a young man.
I used to watch a lot of I Dream of Jeannie when I was younger.
And Nick at Night?
Yes.
I Dream of Jeannie.
Me too. I love that show. She was so fantastic. I will be also getting to moderate a panel with Frank Cho, amazing artist. He's done both DC and Marvel art.
Yeah.
He does his own stuff. He did and he did a Kickstarter a couple years back, which I helped kickstart, Drawing Beautiful Women.
Yep.
It's a phenomenal book. He's great. I can't wait to meet him. It'll be great to get to talk with him. And then on that's on Saturday, along with the podcast panel. And then on Sunday, I'll be getting to talk with Lori Petty. I'll be moderating her panel as well.
Right.
And I'm so mad I'm not going to be there.
And she's in?
She's in Tank Girl. She's in
League of Their Own.
She is Tank Girl. She's in Point Break.
She is in a lot of television shows, actually.
Oh, Orange is the New Black?
And she actually plays a DC character. She's the voice of, Livewire. She's the voice of Livewire in the animated series.
Did not know that.
That's awesome.
Yeah. She's just amazing.
That's very cool.
Yeah. And she's in a lot of stuff. And A League of Their Own. Hello.
Yeah, that's a famous
movie. In the Army now?
But, yeah. I mean, Tank Girl, for me personally, Tank Girl is it. And then it's A League of Their Own, and then it's In the Army Now. And
It's
going to be cool. So Dave is obviously
Branching out from last year.
Yeah. Well, last year you did Erin Gray, which was awesome.
Oh, she was fantastic.
And you got all that inside scoop about her and
Voyager. Oh, man, I can't think of Janeway the same way ever again.
She tried out for Voyager for Janeway.
Yeah.
And she unfortunately didn't get that part.
I wish she did.
That would have been interesting if she was.
I would have loved it.
But, yeah, so that's going to be cool. So we'll all be there. I'll be mostly chained to the art table. So, I mean, maybe I'll break away here and there, but we'll see what happens.
It'll be a good time. Nickel City Con is always a lot of fun.
I'm so sad to be missing it, guys.
If you guys are local or, you know, live in New York, live in Pennsylvania, you know, live in Ohio, come by.
Yeah, there's a ton of big guests. I mean, not just the ones that Dave...
Lou Ferrigno from,
The Incredible Hulk.
The Hulk. If you're a fan of Star Trek Continues, he was in the Orion episode.
Yes, he was. We also have Richard Dreyfuss from Jaws. Close Encounters of the Third Kind. He's just in everything. Mr. Holland's Opus. You know, these are, like, amazing movies. Classic movies. So he's going to be there. Hulk Hogan's going to be there.
Yeah. If you like Power Rangers, like Anthony Mullen does, the Green Ranger Tommy will be there. Can't remember his actual name.
I don't know. And then Jason Mewes from Jay and Silent Bob.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to be there.
Yep.
So there's lots of people to see besides us, but we'd be flattered if you came to
see. If you just came to see one of us,
you'd have to hunt them down, though.
Yeah.
Well, one of them is stationary. Aaron will be at a table in the,
Yeah, you can see me at my Numina table, Numina Comics. I'll be there.
And, you know, maybe you'll give Aaron like a schedule. I'll come visit his table if you want to come meet me.
And I can
get a photo op with me on the side.
You guys should do photo ops if you're in the area. You should come get pictures with the Synthaholics guys.
And I can proudly say that my graphic novel will be out and ready for sale.
Snakeland
is out and done.
Yes!
Mm-hmm. It is done. It is printed, so...
Yay.
It's all set.
That is amazing.
Yeah.
Great news.
Yeah, very cool. So,
That's great.
Lots of fun, exciting stuff happening this weekend, the 18th, 19th, and 20th, I believe, this weekend.
Yes.
So, of May. Mm-hmm. So, if you're listening to this in the future, we're sorry.
You didn't make the cut.
You didn't make it, but maybe in the future we'll meet.
Yeah.
In the past?
We'll meet again.
If it's in the future, don't know how. Talking about this weekend, wouldn't it be the past?
Don't know when.
The dulcet tones of Aaron O'Brien to you for Synthaholics After Dark.
That was beautiful.
Thank you. All right. Well, let's get to the topic in hand.
Yes.
So, Holly, you have finished Discovery. And
last we talked, you were just on episode 6.
Yes. And we've gotten through the 7. Rest.
No, I watched Mud.
No, you didn't get to Mud yet, that
Are you
one,
sure?
with the time thing.
Yes.
So, because we were excited, because that was a kind of fun episode.
You guys were excited for Mud, yes. Yeah. Okay, Nessa, now I remember, yes.
But Holly hated Mud.
I really don't like him.
Well, he's a villain.
You're not supposed to like him.
Oh, I love villains, but I didn't like him.
Really?
Scoundrel villain?
I was so happy when he got what he quote-unquote deserved, which he didn't deserve a woman
Mowage.
Who was just so excited for him.
Mowage is what brings us together.
Bye-bye.
So, a plus of the minds, ma'am.
So the episode 7, you with Harry Mudd.
I thought it was brilliant.
It's a fun episode.
It was.
It's a kind of a Groundhog Day kind of thing.
Yeah, you're on the edge of your seat, but that doesn't mean I liked Harry Mudd. And
do you like Rainn Wilson?
Who? The actor who played Harry Mudd.
Yeah. I mean,
I think he did a great job.
He's the guy from The Office who plays Dwight.
I have been told by a lot of people that I need to watch The Office.
Ooh.
I haven't watched The Office either.
But I haven't watched
Dave,
The Office.
That does not surprise me.
Yes. Yeah. Does not surprise the, does not surprise the audience either, probably.
The gap in your knowledge of pop culture is very, astoundingly
well, you know,
very narrow. But I know a lot about Star Trek.
You know a lot about Star Trek and video games.
And Star Wars.
Star Wars. And then everything gets kind of fuzzy.
Battlestar Galactica.
A little muddled up there.
Yeah.
Well, as far as The Office goes, I was like, oh, The Office. I'll start with the original, the BBC
the Orifice
version. And I could not handle it. It was just so boring.
I tried to watch the first season of The American Office, and I worked at Time Warner Cable at the time, and it reminded me too much of work, and it depressed me, so I didn't find it funny. I found it depressing.
I see.
And so I couldn't go very far in the first season.
I think that's why people liked it, because they identified with the idiocy of the office politics.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I think.
Sure.
And then people became the characters grew out of their... I mean, grew bigger roles, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so. But it just made me sad. I was like, this is too much like being at work.
Yeah,
I need to escape from work, not like revisit
I didn't
it when
come
I'm at home.
Home to watch me at work.
That was my issue with The Office. So I did try. So okay. To be fair,
well,
to me. The actor I recognize him
Rain
from
Wilson,
pictures
yeah.
and mm-hmm. memes and all that jazz.
I've seen him in things.
I seen that guy somewhere.
I seen that memes.
I seen
them memes.
Is that Michael Caine? Michael Caine.
I seen the memes.
I seen them the memes.
Jesus. What is going on with our show?
I drank an entire 5-shot Long Island iced tea before the show, and I'm halfway through
his second.
People, I'm just going to tell you that this is what happens when Dave's been drinking, and there's no real outline to the show, so because it's just a recap.
Yeah. But stay with us, because I got some thoughts.
Yeah, because we're getting Holly's thoughts on Discovery, part 2.
Okay,
yeah.
So...
Didn't like
so
Harry Mudd.
Harry Mudd.
I thought the episode was written really well,
mm-hmm.
but I don't like him.
Okay, but what about in context? So you've seen all 15 episodes. In context, does this episode work for you in the context
or is
of
it just a
one?
Weird segue episode? You're like, what does this have to do with anything?
I don't think it's a weird segue. And I realize that it's different from all of the other episodes that you see. And it's different from a lot of episodes that have come before it. But I thought it was a...
The one thing is good about this episode, I have to say, I mean, for other than a segue episode, is that it establishes that Michael Burnham's character and Ash Tyler do have a thing together. Like, there's like an attraction thing. So
yeah,
that's probably the biggest... Of all of them.
Yeah, I loved... I actually did like that because, you know, I definitely still don't subscribe to the fact that the show is centered around Michael Burnham. I think she's a big part of the plot line,
but
I really don't
her.
Think it's on her.
Yeah.
And I think a big part of her story is... her upbringing and the cultures between different races. Right. And that's really, that's definitely the biggest thing is like your different race. And, she's a human who was raised by Klingons and she,
Vulcans.
Sorry. Yeah. She was not raised by Vulcans, or Klingons. She was raised by Vulcans. I've been drinking too. So she's a human raised by Vulcans and, she fights her nature.
Right.
And living amongst, you know, Starfleet is a collective. Well, that's a really bad word to use for Starfleet.
No, it is collective. It's all there all together. It's the big melting pot.
Yeah.
Well, so 7 of 9 calls, you know, Voyager her collective.
Her collective. Yeah. 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 So, you know, that's beautiful, and I think that's basically what Discovery is about. Mm-hmm. It's about the Federation becoming what it is, mm-hmm. and she is maybe not the center of it, but her experiences are a good way to showcase that.
Yeah, sort of like a lens you're seeing it through.
Yeah. So
it's an interesting viewpoint. And then you on the opposite side, the you see the Klingons reject that, and like the Starfleet wants to, you know, the Federation wants to be inclusive, and that will destroy our culture. Where Michael is like, this is my culture I was raised in, but I'm, you know, I have other things going on with
inclusive.
Me. Yeah, I'm inclusive. I'm trying to learn to be human now.
Yeah,
so.
And I honestly think that the Klingons have it completely wrong. I don't think they really understand, because I'm pretty
Klingon mach tak judge.
Sure. I'm pretty sure
remain
the
Klingon.
First time
Gesundheit.
I'm pretty sure the first time you actually hear the Klingons, which is in episode one, and it's like you're just reading and trying to understand what they're talking about, but they talk about how we come in peace is how you know when to kill humans.
Right.
Because
yeah,
if they say we come in peace, then they're lying and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And I think that I just think the Klingons misunderstand
it's
the
fear.
Human race.
But it's also it's fear too, because
definitely
they're so afraid that their culture will be watered down and changed from what the Federation has to offer.
Well,
they don't have to integrate to coexist.
No, you don't have to.
And well, I wish they understood that in episode one.
Well,
damn
no,
it.
No, the Klingons understood that, and T'Kuvma understood that, but T'Kuvma needed propaganda to make people rally behind him.
Well, he was grandstanding, of course, to reach for power.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, like, you know, he's a cult leader. He's like trying to talk to the people and tell them, like, this is bad.
Stoke what you're afraid of, that you're going to lose something, and then if you stoke that fear, you can get the people to be energized, with you and to back you.
So I'm sure T'Kuvma knew what he was saying was bullshit. He just was like, most cult leaders
positively manipulate them into doing something that might have been good.
I mean, listening to last podcast on the left, like, most cult leaders know what they're saying is utter bullshit. But they just see how far they can push it and how far people...
Well, whether they know it's bullshit or not, it's not really the case. They just know how to manipulate the people. That's most important.
Right.
Yeah.
And so it's not just cult leaders. It's just politicians. Politicians do the same thing. You see someone who becomes that demagogue kind of personality is like, you know, I have the answers to your I have all the solutions to all these problems in your life, and by doing that, they stoke fear of what could happen.
All these problems that you have that you didn't know you had.
You didn't know you had these problems, but they're there.
Hey.
So the Harry Mudd episode of the time travel, I think, is clever and a lot of fun. Like I said, kind of like the Groundhog Day.
Yeah.
But it's fun to see. I understand, like, Harry Mudd's not the greatest villain in the world. He's just sort of like I said, the scoundrel.
He's just a prick.
He's a fun villain.
No, he's just a douchebag.
You need to watch his other episodes in TOS.
I'm just saying.
He's fun.
Like,
he was vengeful in this one, so maybe the fun got sucked out of it a little bit because he's so vindictive in this episode.
But the setup for this episode makes this episode, his character in this episode, unbelievable. Because he was such a manipulative tool bag in the prison cell, and now all of a sudden he's brilliant? That didn't make any sense.
Well, he was working with the Klingons all along.
Just saying.
Yeah.
It wasn't, I don't know. Maybe it was just more of a shock value for this episode. His brilliance to shine through or
they
whatever.
Definitely could have done it better. Like, I feel like all the episodes need like 5 to 10 more minutes of exposition or just story.
Yeah.
Right.
Because we needed to know more about how Harry Mudd actually got away, because they just kind of gloss over it. I mean, he must have been working with the Klingons.
You know,
the show asks you to assume a lot.
Yeah, but with Harry Mudd, I don't really want to know. I kind of want to be kind of like, that guy is just so bizarre and so offbeat that maybe he could do those kind of things, you know?
Sure.
And Harry Mudd's always his own worst enemy from every episode we ever see. He's always the one who gets himself in trouble in the end.
You know, but, Aaron, I think both of us kind of agreed this was kind of like a non sequitur for the rest of the season.
It, other than the establishment of the relationship.
But it could have happened in many other ways.
Oh, sure.
And it was a great way to do it.
And it was reaffirmed in the next episode. So it didn't. This episode could not be there at all, and nothing would change.
I disagree.
I think the episode is fun. I enjoy the episode. I think it's. I love to see Harry Mudd again, of course, and the, you know, the establishment of their whatever you want to call their relationship is fun between Michael and Tyler Ash Tyler. Yeah,
I think that the reason why we definitely needed all the loops and Harry Mudd to put them in this loop. Was because we as fans understand the logic that Michael is following, and she's denying herself emotional feelings.
Yes.
So by doing this time loop and slowly breaking the audience into her having emotions and letting herself have emotions,
that's a good
over
point.
And over and over again. It opened you up as an audience to allow it in the future. Because if this episode didn't happen and they just all of a sudden had a relationship, you guys would be like, nah, she was raised by Vulcans. That shit ain't real. Like,
Sarek was Vulcan and married a human.
Yeah, but that doesn't matter.
That doesn't matter. He could. That doesn't matter.
But no, I think she's right because we do see, isn't at the end of this episode, we see her kind of like breaking down and saying like, I got these feelings.
Yeah.
I want to talk about them, you know, and she's kind of scared of them too, right?
Yep.
So that's
I don't know how to process it.
Well, which is totally understandable if you've kept your feelings and like you know on lockdown for a long time, and then you all of a sudden you're starting like to think about them and explore it. All of a sudden it's like, whoa, there's a lot here. Cool. So what would you grade this episode from an A to an F? Obviously, A being high marks and F being the lowest.
Well, I thought it was super clever. Mm-hmm. And
you just didn't like Harry Mudd.
I just don't like him as a villain. Yeah. So, I mean, I'll go with a B+.
Okay.
Just because
it's a fun episode.
It's a fun episode.
And you get to see Lorca thrown into space, so it's kind of fun.
Lorca, the Lorca death montage was definitely fun. Definitely sad, because I love Lorca. I wanted to see Lorca win a couple times.
Well, let's go to
Civis Pacem Parabellum.
Yeah, episode 8. Okay.
The Saru fail episode.
This is the one where they're on the planet.
And Saru goes like, Saru's like, it could be wonderful if we just don't do anything.
If we just got penetrated by these sparkles over and over again.
I really liked this episode.
Titty penetration.
No. And
what?
What?
That doesn't happen.
No.
If there was a weird image of like the sparkles like disappearing into his nipples, maybe. But I don't know where you get this from,
Mr. Sparkle.
They went in all his other orifices. I mean,
yeah.
Anyway, I love.
What are the aliens called? I'm sorry for this one.
Pavans.
Pavans. That's right.
Pavo.
Pavo from Planet Pavo, the Pavans. So they're
Mary Poppins.
They're tiny little people that that come and infiltrate you.
A spoonful of sugar.
Nice. A spoonful of sugar make the medicine go down.
The Pavos are. I liked this episode a lot because it reminded me of Avatar, how everything is connected, and there's a central network.
It's a circle
through throughout the planet, but it was these Pavans. It was these actual like glistening particles that were in the air, and I really liked how they gave Saru this image of what life could be, and as his not predatory because he's not the predator.
The victim. Predatory?
Predatory? That doesn't sound right.
Sounds weird.
Let's just roll with it.
The predicated.
You know.
The stalked.
It was really emotional for me because that's so sad.
That he felt safe for once?
For once. He got to feel complete bliss. And it wasn't just that Michael took it away from him. It was that he knew she needed to. And he really didn't want her to. And I felt that was beautiful and sad and important.
I mean, it's an interesting character story study for him. But this is before that they do the... Is it before... I can't remember this episode. How does it end? Is it they're fighting at the crystal stalk?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. He hoof kicks
Oh, yeah. He kicks like a mule.
He's like, fuck you, bitch. I am staying.
He does like Hulk smash on the thing with his hands. Saru smash! And then on the bed, and then, you know, the part I really wanted him to be like, yeah, they had control over my mind. And then he was like, no, I was me. And then I wanted, Saru, you could have redeemed yourself.
No, redemption is honesty.
Yeah, there's something to be said.
I wanted him to be honest that they were taking over his mind. I wanted that. I wanted them to be.
Because you wanted
them to be villainous.
I wanted because I really wanted to like Saru, and
it's something I'm actually fascinated in a sense with is and it's not the same, of course, but like drug addiction, where you see people who are genuinely good people, but when the addiction and the need, the craving for whatever mm-hmm. that addiction is, if it's drug,
the
if it's alcohol,
of the alcohol,
they will screw over everyone and anyone because of that addiction. And they'll, you know, do it to their mothers and their fathers and brothers and
their children,
anybody. They'll do those things.
Happy Mother's Day.
Happy Mother's Day.
Yes, we are recording on Mother's Day.
Yes.
Sorry,
I'm saying titty so much.
Mama.
They are necessary to be a mother.
Yes. For life. Titty. For life.
Nurturing of life.
Anyway, Saru.
But yeah, so it's an interesting thought. It's not, like I said, it's not quite the same, but it's that you find safety in something or something that ensconces your brain or your soul and think that you're safe. And then all of a sudden... It's
going to get ripped away from you.
It's a false security. It's a false security, of course. And then that you'll fight to keep that feeling going. So that's the thing. And I'm always fascinated how far people will go. And like, because if you know anybody with any addiction, which I have known for quite a few people in my life, that there's a lot of them very good people. But when that addiction kicks in, like I said, they'll do things and they'll do crazy stuff for whatever they got to get. You know, if it's gambling or if it's whatever, and you're just like, oh man. So I feel for Saru in a lot of ways. I don't think Saru's evil for it. Like what you're saying, like you wish they took over his brain. I don't think that's how it is. I think it's not the equivalent of addiction, but it's that. That feel of that
the euphoria.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you. The euphoria or whatever that it gives you.
Yep.
Yeah. It just made me sad because I really liked Saru as a character who was interesting up until this point. Then it just was like,
lost respect for him.
I lost lots of respect for him. I mean, he earns it back. But it takes a couple episodes.
Yeah. No, I have a lot of respect. I liked characters with flaws.
Yeah.
And I like
to
know
that. I love villains.
Yes, villains are great because you know, and if there's a well-written villain, then you know the reason why they're doing things.
Right.
So if it's just some guy just doing crazy evil shit, you're like, well, I don't know why you're doing that. So whatever.
Yeah.
And this was obviously the one where they send out the signal in the crystal stalk.
Yeah, and it brings the Klingons to them, and they have to defend Paavo.
And we do get a closer relationship. I think this is where Ash and Michael make their moves. Do they kiss in this one?
Yes, they do. They do, and they do the whole needs of the many and the needs of the few.
I'm like, shut up, Michael. Just kiss me, you idiot.
I'm pretty sure he didn't earn that, the needs of the many and needs of the few lines, but it was good. And this episode actually opens with a really nice fight with another ship at the beginning, and Discovery warps in and helps, jumps in and helps them, and then they get destroyed.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It was a nice scene seeing Lorca Tactics.
Yes. Well, you love Lorca Tactics.
Lorca.
Episode 10.
No, well, episode 9.
There was
episode
a 9, but they really didn't do much.
Episode 9?
Yeah.
Episode 9 was the one where they rescue Cornwell and they drop the sensors on the ship and they blow it up.
Oh, I guess I was.
They did a lot. They did a lot of stuff in that episode.
Yeah, they did.
Tyler. We see Tyler's PTSD meltdown.
PTSD, yeah,
that's a big thing.
That's right.
Where he can't handle it.
That was a great episode.
And then episode 9 was great. I loved episode 9. And then you know, Laurel jumps on him and she does the transporter hug.
Oh.
And she comes back to Discovery with them.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So yeah.
She's too trying to skip over episode 9. It's like, nothing happens in episode. And then they go to the mirror universe at the end.
But everything happens.
So many things happen in this episode.
This episode I loved because, I mean, again, it is super Michael heavy, but...
Did you like when Michael challenged Cole?
It was great, I have to say.
Challenging his Klingon honor.
But, you know what? I feel like... I still stand by the fact that I don't know that I trust this quote-unquote Klingon honor, because even to the very last episode, it's really in question.
Well, I mean,
until the last episode, when it's held, like, with a knife to their necks, they are like, well, we don't have honor. Well, and then she's like, you're gonna have motherfucking honor, bitches.
Well, that was Cole's whole thing. Like, I mean, that's what Michael was calling him out on. He says, you have no honor. Fight.
Right.
Try to prove it by fighting me.
Right. And
he didn't want to back down from a human female.
That fight scene was badass. And I knew exactly what was going to happen. And I know watching TV with me is weird. And Aaron, you don't know how it is to watch a movie or a show.
I've never watched anything
with him. I've been watching lots of stuff with Colleen.
I try to hold my tongue a lot. And sometimes I'll just like mumble shit or I'll scream shit in the middle and it's unintelligible. And I try not to.
She speaks in tongues through the Holy Spirit.
But, like, when I watch TV with other people, like, if I speak, I think people think they can talk back to me.
Ooh.
And have a conversation with me. And I'm like, no, shut up. I can talk. You're not allowed to talk.
We rewind a lot of stuff.
We rewind a
because
lot.
I talk a lot.
He does.
You and talk a lot.
He does.
See, I don't think I've... Other than we've seen Star Wars and a couple movies together, but you're pretty quiet. Once in a while, you'll lean over and say something.
It might be because he's already seen these.
Yeah.
That's so he'll say something,
I'm trying to fill things in, because sometimes it looks like you have questions.
No, I'm just super into it. And so he'll start talking, and I'm either not hearing him, like legitimately have no idea he's talking. or he starts talking.
That's what Aaron thinks.
And I hit pause, and I look at him, and I go, I can't watch and listen to you at the same time.
I have a very dear friend that, especially when we're younger, we'd see movies, and like something would be going on, and then he'd get like the idea what's going on with the plot or something that was going to happen. He goes, oh, so what he's saying is that blah, 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 blah. I'm like, dude, I'm watching the same movie.
I get it.
All right. It's like, I'm like, shut up.
Right.
When me and Aaron go to movies, I'll point out things I think is like a joke, especially if we're like going to like record later. I'll be like, oh, this is like something that's
gonna
like,
be fun.
Well, I mean, but most of the times you're just like, you'll point out like something like either you think is cool or just ridiculous. Like, what's that about?
Yeah.
Well, basically, when I was watching this episode, there were things that I wanted to shout out and like I wanted to geek out about, like the fight scene and how I was like, yeah, she's totally gonna energize in the middle of this fight. It's gonna be great. And I couldn't say any of this because I was like, I don't want him to talk back to me.
Right.
So I'm just not gonna say anything.
She's trying not to.
This is how like
button lipped.
Trying not to invite David talking to her.
I don't want to encourage conversations.
But the thing is, even afterwards, you're like, can't talk about it because we're doing an episode on it.
That's another thing. I can't like. After he watched it, he like looks at me and he's like, "What did you think?" And I was like, "I really don't think it's a good idea for us to talk right now." Like, I feel like. If I say anything right now, I'm going to forget what I said.
Right.
But, no, this episode was awesome. Michael has to, they use the spore drive to do multiple
jumps.
143 jumps or something.
Yeah, crazy. Basically to map out
the ship of
what's it called? What's the death ship? The ship of the dead.
Yeah. And, so in order to do so, they have to have sensors on the inside, and so Michael volunteers to go, and she takes Ash with her, and they find Admiral...
Cornwell.
I thought it was Cornwall, but I was like, is it
Cornwall?
Well, or
Cornhole. Cornhole. I am the great Cornwall.
She named a prison. They find her, and the whole thing with Ash having his PTSD moment, like, you guys kept asking me, like, do you trust him? Like, you don't like him. And I'm like, no, I still don't like him. And even with his PTSD, and I'm married to a Marine, I was still like, that doesn't make me feel bad for him. And this episode got over, and Dave looks at me, and he's like, do you feel bad for him? I was like, look, you can't ask me that shit. Like,
well, it's just
that's not how it works.
Because
he's still untrustworthy, but yeah, I feel bad for the guy. Well, but still, no, I don't trust him.
It was just funny because I was, you know, because Holly purposely didn't listen to our episodes on Discovery so she wouldn't be spoiled.
Right.
So I was, you know, as we watched the episode, I was kind of giving her Aaron and I's reaction to them a little bit.
He was trying to, yeah.
And, you know, it was just funny because, you know, we were casting all sorts of shade at Ash Tyler up until this point.
And Aaron,
and then Aaron's like, oh, I feel bad for him. Like, I don't.
Well, there was more of I think it's a later episode, isn't it, where we really see what he went through.
They show some of it in this episode.
This episode? There was more later, too.
There's more later,
but it starts this episode where we start seeing him.
Right. Yeah, so this episode is like a turning point for Ash because once he sees
Laurel,
he starts to actually get those flashbacks of, and he says in the next episode, I think he starts talking about how he can't sleep and he has these visions and he's not, you know, he's not himself and that's why he's so weird. But you actually start to see them. So I think that that's like the point of them showing us is like it's more forceful and he's actually starting to really see him. And he sees him, the only word I can say for it is worshiping Laurel in a sexual manner.
I think we were almost right off the bat, we're like, Mangerian candidate. That's exactly what we thought immediately. Like a sleeper agent who is going to be somehow engaged to, we didn't know in what shape or form, but that's, you know, the Klingons were using him as.
Yeah, episode 5, we're like, yeah. I mean, very first time we saw him, like, it's too convenient, you know.
Like, he's like a hidden.
And he's too nice and all this stuff like that.
It's just too sweet. Such a sweet boy.
See, I didn't notice any of the sweetness.
Well, I didn't mean sweet, but just like he seemed like stalwart.
He seemed like he was proud.
He seemed too good to be true for a guy who's been through seven months of torture.
Yeah,
like he's way too together.
Yeah, you're a little too. Exactly.
Because because we kept talking about it because he showed no signs of PTSD, like at all.
Yeah.
Until this point, and so it's just like, nah, he's too good to be true. Like. 7 months of brutal torture from Klingons, and then you're getting raped on the side.
Yeah,
I mean he's way too seemingly stable for that to be true.
But something we talked about in the first part of this was like that they're talking about PTSD and like mental breaks and like how people cope with things, and there are people who mentally block out traumatic things.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, so like. I'm not saying I trusted him or forgave him or had any kind of like sadness thrown his way, but like it was plausible that it was legitimately a forgetfulness or a block out. But I think the best part about this episode was how they handled the fight scene, how they handled the
with Kor.
The actual human standing up to the Klingon and besting him, and I just thought it was brilliant and amazing, and it ultimately led to the Discovery having the ability to break down the cloaking mechanism that all of the Klingon ships had, but it also made what's his name really sick?
Stamets.
And he really shouldn't ever be jumping again. And in the next episode, he agrees to jump.
It's the end of this episode.
One more time.
But see, this is the thing.
Jump again. Sorry.
But, what was I going to say? So the idea that, I lost my train of thought.
Stamets.
With that song. No, it wasn't Stamets.
Oh, it was about the song?
Lorca?
No.
One more
I'm sorry.
Time.
Let's move on.
Okay. Well.
I was sad when Cole died because he was like the main bad guy, and I loved Kenneth Mitchell. I love how he played Cole. I loved, like, he was such a sassy Klingon.
Is this about what you think, or is this about what I think?
Yeah, shut up, you.
You should see his face right now.
I just want to talk about Discovery.
No, he was a good bad guy. He was.
He was a cool bad guy. Yeah. He was like a badass-looking bad guy.
Badass bad guy. Ass guy.
God, I cannot remember what I was going to say.
Titty ass.
Had nothing to do with titties.
Sorry.
Let's move on. Let's go to the next episode.
So,
despite yourself,
Stamets says he's gonna jump. He's gonna.
Oh, don't worry about it, Captain. I got this one.
This one's really weird because I think deep down he wanted what happens to happen because
Stamets.
Yeah, and not out of like a. I don't think it was like a subconscious.
That's a weird, yes, because, that's a weird thought. I never thought of that.
Yeah.
So we saw all the stuff that was happened with Harry Mudd, mm-hmm. with all the things, and Stamets had some kind of clarity of what was going on. Mm-hmm. So obviously his subconscious or his conscious is not quite within our...
like our understanding.
Yeah.
We just don't get it.
So if he's like, maybe he sees Lorca as a different person. That's an interesting thought, and I never considered that until just right now.
Yeah.
Until Holly just said that.
I feel like he did, because if you think about Stamets,
we're sending you home, sir. Don't worry.
He's always stood up to Lorca and gave him shade, threw him shade, yeah. and gave him shit. And he was just like, you know what? I'll do it.
Yeah.
And Lorca was like, really? And he's like, yeah, you know, after this, I'll retire. I'll have a lot of time. But the way he was saying these things was like, yeah, something bad's about to happen. Hmm. And I don't know if you guys felt that when you first watched
no,
it.
No, not at all. I mean,
no, I
didn't. That's how
you,
I felt.
You saying this is the first time I ever thought, and it's a very, very interesting point, because maybe Stamets... I don't think at that point I understood Stamets.
I don't think he grasped what was going to happen.
Didn't. I think Stamets is always on this cusp of
he's technically outside of space-time.
Yes, but he's like this intuitiveness that he has, but he doesn't have understanding. It's sort of like Spidey sense kind of thing. Like he gets it, but he doesn't understand it.
Right.
Like he knows when something's happening,
inklings.
But he doesn't.
Yes. That makes a lot more sense because... I just didn't see, like, because Lorca's plan is so convoluted.
Mm-hmm.
Everything has to go right so much for Lorca's plan to work out.
Mm-hmm. Right.
This interesting fact mm-hmm. makes his plan even more ridiculous. Because if he's not really coaxing Stamets into it, or if he doesn't know Stamets is going to read into he wants him to jump, mm-hmm. that makes it even more far-fetched.
Yeah, that's true.
Because, I mean, Lorca's plan is, like, what we find out about Lorca is heartbreaking, and it makes his plan utterly ridiculous.
But Lorca was given the free rein to get whatever scientists he needed, and he knew that from his world, his dimension, that Stamets was the smartest person for the job. Like, and granted, I don't think he knew what kind of understanding the Stamets would have. And it's not actually talked about in the other dimension how long they've had the technology. It's not talked about. The only thing that they ever say about it is that they use the technology of the spore drive to create a weapon. They don't say how long they've been working on it. And Stamets... was working on it before Lorca left. That's all we know.
Yeah.
So whether Lorca fed Stamets from our perspective universe, you know, whether he kind of fed him ideas and information, we don't know. But I just feel like that was one thought I had, was that I felt like he kind of was okay with what was going to happen. Only, you know, he's got, you know, the little veins and the roots and the trails, and he's seen so many things and so many outcomes, and mm-hmm. he doesn't know how to process them. And they just could have been crossed or mixed, or, and he's just okay with whatever's going to happen. And that's how I felt. He was just like kind of weirdly at peace. And it was odd to me, especially with, what's his name, Paul?
Well, Paul Stamets, but then you're saying Culber, his
boyfriend.
His boyfriend. Yeah.
His partner.
Yeah. I liked him.
Yeah.
I was very sad for that.
Well, so yeah, so obviously they go into
the mirror universe at the end.
Yeah.
And then we have Despite Yourself, directed by our In Riker We Trust, Jonathan Franks.
Right, right.
This was probably like my second favorite episode.
Yeah, they have to impersonate their mirror selves. And one thing that I'm not okay with, because maybe David was talking and I missed it. But what the fuck happened to the Discovery from this universe?
It switched. They switched places.
But what happened to the Discovery when it was in our universe?
It got destroyed immediately.
By what?
Klingons.
No.
Yep.
No.
Yep.
Because they went to Outpost 24 or 42 or whatever. There weren't any Klingons there.
They didn't make
it. If it was immediate?
No. They jumped to Pavo.
They jumped to right outside Pavo space and then...
And the Klingons are on their way.
And they just got ambushed.
The Discovery from the... When was that?
They don't really...
It was a throwaway line right when she shot the fortune cookies in episode 14.
Oh, okay.
It's literally a throwaway. It was one of the most disappointing things I had, because I was hoping...
Captain, we were all wondering what was that, the mirror Discovery.
I was really hoping Captain Killy was kicking ass and taking names, and they just got destroyed, and Admiral Cornwell said she saw the wreckage.
Well, they're all bravado. They're not skill.
Yeah,
You're talking about Mirror Universe people?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot that... And you know, what you're saying about with Lorca and Stamets, I originally thought when he made that jump that Lorca was playing Stamets.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's
it seemed like it. He was like, okay,
but
sure,
maybe
yeah,
it is flipped.
If you,
maybe
if you feel up to it.
Maybe Stamets is playing Lorca.
He's playing Lorca, maybe.
So, going back to Despite Yourself. So, yeah, obviously they come into the Mirror Universe. They obviously realize they're totally in the wrong place and time universe.
Only because their equipment's not working, and they survey the area and they notice that everything is vibrating at a different rate.
Yeah, the quantum signatures are different. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which
so they all masquerade as their counterparts and try to survive.
Yeah,
and I think it was a fun episode, but.
How are you familiar with the Mirror Universe besides this? I mean, obviously, Mirror Universe showed up in.
Enterprise.
Enterprise, but also showed up in the
original series.
The original series was where it first came, the Spock with the goatee.
And they overdid it in Deep Space Nine.
Deep Space Nine, we saw a lot. We never saw in TNG. So have you seen
the most episodes? The most out of each series, I've seen The Next Generation the most.
Okay.
So no Mirror Universe.
I don't hate Enterprise. But I don't like the opening, so I don't watch it. That's legitimately the only reason why I don't put it on Netflix, because I don't want to listen to
the opener.
Song.
In the chalkboard.
It really is.
And the thing
it's
is,
so
that the Mirror Universe for the Enterprise episodes are right before the episodes we watched for last week's discussion.
Mm. Well, I don't have a lot of
experience. Okay. Yeah, because obviously the Mirror Universe has been well established in the canon. I mean, it came up in the original series. Then it was seen Deep Space Nine, Enterprise, and now we're seeing it now. So
in canon, what happened first? Discovery?
Yes.
Technically, Discovery.
Yes.
Enterprise.
Enterprise.
I thought Enterprise was before Discovery.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Enterprise.
So why? I feel like
which is weird too, because almost you have to see the original series Tholian Web, see that first,
yeah.
Then go see Enterprise Mirror Darkly 1 and 2, and then see the original series
Mirror Mirror
Mirror Mirror before you even get into anything else, because then all of a sudden it all makes sense. Even the stuff with the Defiant on this one.
Yeah, it's everything is linked to Tholian Web in the original series mirror episode.
Really bizarre.
Everything is linked to those two episodes.
So
this
can
is
I
really
ask a
weird.
Question?
Yes.
So I don't know how you felt, but David, why were you so like? You kept saying things like. They just got, shit just got crazy and it doesn't make any sense. But if you have all this knowledge about this mirror universe, like, why did this not make sense for Discovery to go there?
To me, it didn't make sense because...
You're talking writing-wise, right?
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't make sense because this was pitched, because I read all the behind-the-scenes stuff.
Mm-hmm.
This was pitched as a Klingon War series, mm-hmm. and they spend 4 episodes... in the second half of the show in the mirror universe where they can't do anything about the Klingon War. Mm. So that's why it was crazy to me, because it made zero sense. Like, this is such a diversion from what they said the story was supposed to be about.
David wanted to see a Klingon War.
I wanted because that's
you want to see a Klingon War.
That's what
story.
That's what they pitched.
Just because you didn't get to see it, though, doesn't mean the Klingon War didn't happen in the actual universe.
Well, obviously it was going on.
I mean, I know it happened, but they pitched it as a war show. That's how they pitched
it. That's where David, he gets pissed off.
I get lost in the weeds.
Because he's sort of like, this. I wanted to see what they said that was going to happen.
Because I felt like it was a bait and switch. They pitched one thing and they gave us something completely different. And what they gave us was fun and interesting, but I still wanted to see the Klingon War.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, Aaron, mm-hmm. Did you feel the same way that when you saw this happen and they went to a mirror universe, did you feel like... it was out of place, or were you like, yeah, that makes sense? Like,
it didn't bother me, but I thought they stayed a little too long in the mirror universe.
Okay.
I'd never hated the mirror universe, but I was never like a giant fan of the mirror, because it doesn't make sense. Like the Klingon Empire, there's like certain things that don't make logistical sense. Like, how does this
mirror universe... All the ship names are the same people are still alive.
Well, not just that, but like, you see the, you know, the Klingon Empire, you know, like, how is that place even like operating? You know, if it's all these warriors, if you don't have like guys that are like scientists, if you don't have bookkeepers and doctors.
Mechanics.
Yeah, it's just this shit doesn't work, you know?
I had this thought during Discovery, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah. No, but I mean, but,
no,
when,
I
you,
did.
But when you look in the mirror universe and you're like, it's just like, you know, like, I'm going to betray you and become, you know, lieutenant now or whatever the thing is, you know. And so they move up rank by killing their, you know.
Counterparts, which is
very Klingon. You know. That's how Klingons that it would do it, too.
It only works so far, and I don't see how society can continue to keep working. You know, I think it's a silly thought. So,
yeah. It felt like a stalemate while they were there.
Yeah,
it stalled. And maybe the show itself really stalled.
It had some.
That was my issue with it, because the story couldn't go on. They had to spend all this time trying to get home. I'm just like, this is not what the show should be about. It should have been like a 2-episode diversion, and it was fun because Mirror Universe is fun.
Yeah.
But like, I wanted to see the Klingon War, and then they skipped it.
And then if you go, obviously, to Enterprise, it's us, those Mirror Darkly 1 and 2, part 1 and 2, which is a really fun 2-episode thing, which you would like because they cut the opening track out. It's like a war scene.
Oh, cool.
It's totally different. They cut, there's no song. It's all like this war, and they see cannons firing and stuff like that. That it's sort of a non sequitur because the characters never really like they're the same characters, but they don't like go into the mirror universe. So
okay. it just cuts over to the mirror universe for 2 episodes, it's a fun silly story.
It's a great show. But we get Discovery, we get all this interaction, but then we get in TOS with Kirk and Spock, where Kirk gets transported into the mirror universe, and yet he has no knowledge of this. And okay, maybe that's classified information. But if Discovery already went there, wouldn't it be some kind of like, hey?
No, I mean, they specifically said to be classified. They had that conference room where we can't let anyone know about it because everyone would want to know if they could find a loved one there or something.
First of all,
but you don't want them.
First of all, the bullshit about classified shit, like, there are things pertinent to your mission. And knowledge is pertinent to your mission.
Right.
So,
but it's the forbidden fruit.
So,
knowledge.
If the Discovery found out that there's this quadrant that you can't fly through or space through or whatever, warp through, and that because it'll send you back in time, that shouldn't be classified. That should be, hey, when plotting a course, avoid this.
That would cause a causality loop, and the Defiant couldn't go back there, and they wouldn't find it. And then
why did
the Reliant go to SETI Alpha?
That is hilarious because they literally could have prevented the Defiant from going to the Mirror Universe in the first place in Discovery.
In Tholian Web, right?
Yeah, they could have prevented it. That is absolutely hilarious.
Right.
Well, those are the things I think of.
Okay, so
I love that.
So, despite yourself, which is a fun episode to see them kind of like
you. I really liked that we got to see Tilly.
Yeah, Tilly becomes Killy.
Tilly.
Yeah.
And she doesn't become her, but it was really cute.
Yeah,
it was fun and exciting. And the next episode, you get to see. Michael take again Ash to the rebel planet because in the first episode and then the previous episode,
Colbert died yourself.
Colbert,
Stamets' partner.
Yeah,
he got his neck snapped. That was the most surprising thing that happened in all
by
Discovery
Ash.
To me.
And I guess I mean this is not a play by play, but like I don't know. I thought that it was.
When you saw that, when you saw Ash snap Culber's neck, were you surprised? Or were you?
So no, because
my jaw dropped when I saw. I was like,
that was the most.
I was like, oh my god, he killed him!
It was the most shocking thing to me in Discovery.
So, but you shouldn't have been shocked because
we were cheering Canada. I just think they're going to kill Culber because I like Culber.
Well, yeah. No, that is the sweetest person ever. Best mate, partner, whatever you want to call him.
Hey,
he
mate.
Was amazing. However, I was not surprised because, mainly because I still, even to this episode, I still did not trust Ash. I had no. I just don't know. But
same here.
But he, you liked Tyler.
No, I didn't trust him.
But
at all.
But when he approaches Laurel, he has.
She says the Klingon prayer to him that makes him try to remember.
Yeah. And he loses a bit of time.
Yeah.
And he wakes up across the room at a panel, and he's like, "What?" And so I knew immediately.
Something
I was like,
was going on.
Yep, he's brainwashed, or
well, that's the Manchurian candidate. I mean, because it's like you're supposed to say some kind of code word to activate your agent,
right? Your sleeper agent.
Yeah, and then they're like, "Oh, now I have to, you know, do my mission." You know,
right, and he woke up. So because they showed us that. They showed us his confusion. Yeah. I knew.
Yeah.
So when he got up and he killed him, I was like, "Yeah, that's not Ash. That sucks.
That sucks." Colbert
I'm so
dead.
Upset about this death.
He died.
Right now. But like, the hatred and the disgust and like everything for Ash was just like really pungent, and I couldn't mourn because I was just like, "You're a douchebag.
You're a douchebag."
A Klingon douchebag.
Yeah, but then he sneaks away on this party with Michael to go down to the planet, and now Michael, she pretends that she's going there to extract information from, like, the data core or something, but then she ends up actually, like,
she was going to go down to, like, basically crush them, and then she was going to get information so they could find out where the rest of the rebels were hiding.
The rebels, yes. The rebel bases. And then she goes down and she, like Michael should, she's like, "Hey.
You're all gonna die.
You're gonna die. I wanna help you. You need to evacuate, but I need some information. You need to evacuate regardless of whether or not you give me the information. But this meeting has to get on and let's get this going because this shit needs to happen.
And who does she meet
this
down
happens.
There?
And the shit.
Not just Sarek.
Her daddy.
You're my daddy.
You're my daddy.
But we see
Volk.
Volk.
Volk. Isn't it Volk?
Volk.
Volk. So Volk is the
leader
of the rebellion, which is beautiful, like poetic justice.
Right.
Like it's just beautiful.
Symbology.
And honestly, in the first couple episodes of Discovery, I didn't think Volk was that bad a guy. I felt like he was his trust was misplaced, but he wasn't a terrible Klingon. I thought there was like redemption in line for him, but obviously that's not the case. but when you see Volk in this mirror universe, he is.
Well, he's trying to coexist, but we're seeing the mirror version of him, like the opposite, where instead of he's Klingon only club, he's like, hey, let's join the club.
Right. Humans are the devastators.
Kumbaya.
Humans are the ones trying to exterminate our races, which is the case in this universe. And so I thought it was beautiful that Volk was the leader. And that being said, I know this is kind of like backtracking a little bit, but there was the part where Laurel materialized away from the ship that, what was it, Krull?
Coles.
Yeah, he took over the ship and then she transported to where
Discovery?
Volk was.
She's talking about episode 3?
Yeah, yeah.
Remember when he was abandoned?
Yeah.
Marooned
on that ship and she said, you gotta make the ultimate sacrifice.
But nothing happened.
Well, you didn't see anything.
For like 4 episodes with Volk. And it was just like, let's just pretend like he didn't even exist. So the way it came back around was kind of beautiful.
So I told you before you started watching Discovery that Volk means trust, because I found it was interesting.
You found it was interesting.
Did it do anything for you?
It did not correlate Volk was.
Well, I felt like it did, because he was the Manchurian candidate. They want you to try to trust him.
Well, and the other side of it, you get the introduction of Ash Tyler, and then all of a sudden Volk just disappears.
Yeah.
You're just like, where the hell did Volk go? I mean, until we see him now. In episode 11 here, we don't really know. So,
but
thought it was interesting that his name was Trust, and he's the Manchurian candidate.
Very interesting. But there was nothing about Ash that made me trust him, because whether it was the way the actor played him or whether it was the way the actor's role was written, he never. Shifty eyes. That's all I can say.
Because
body language is key. And if it's an acting flaw, and maybe the actor wasn't supposed to be all shifty eyes and like, you know, act like people were watching him and he was self-conscious of that, then that's the actor's problem. But because he acted that way, I was not... I just couldn't trust him. I didn't.
I don't think anybody was buying in the Volk Ash Tyler thing. I think if you were paying halfway attention, you knew something was up.
Well, you don't find out in The Wolf Inside.
No,
that
you don't.
Volk and Ash Tyler, but you kind of
But you're starting connecting the dots.
Because while Michael is there on the planet,
you do find out because that she can. He flips out at seeing regular Volk, and then he tries to choke her out.
He flips out.
Because this is
the same episode where
last episode the audience finds out. This is the episode where Michael Burnham finds out.
Yeah, and he tries to choke out.
Yeah, because when they get back from the planet, they go. She's like, "What the fuck was that? Trying to fight Volk? What the fuck was that?" And then she's like, "I've been fighting back the heart of a warrior. I was there. I saw you. You fought like a coward. You poked at my eyes and my ears."
Yeah.
And then he chokes her out, and then. Good thing. Slave Saru.
Slave Saru comes
inside.
Yeah.
And not only that, but Michael tries very hard to get the rebels to escape in this mirror universe, and then the Emperor comes in and cuts their heads, just blows up the planet before they have time to evacuate, and it was very, very sad. But I will say, and I know this is totally unrelated, When they said emperor, this is super, probably super, what's the word? Racist? When there was an emperor, I was like, oh my god, I really hope it's the original captain of the Shenzhou. And I know that's super racist, but I'm so sorry.
I'm so sorry, but Michelle Yeoh.
I absolutely loved you as the captain of the Shenzhou. I absolutely loved you, and I was dying for you to come back, and I'm so glad you came back as emperor.
Emperor.
But because the title was emperor, I was like, oh, well,
Why did they call it emperor, not empress?
Because Hoshi was Asian, and she became empress.
I don't understand. Why did they change that?
Maybe she wanted to sound
more... Is that like actor-actress thing? Because like the actress thing is gone. Like people don't use actress
this
anymore.
This is many, 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 many years in the future.
Yeah.
And one word should encompass all genders. So
actress,
emperor, I'm sure they are the same thing. I'm sure it's not a sexist thing.
Well, I mean, it might be because Hoshi Shato declared herself empress, and maybe she got taken down real quick because she had because the empire knew it was an empress, not an emperor. So maybe Michelle Yeoh took emperor to not sound weak.
Maybe that's something. I don't know. I just maybe I'm just old school because I just people say I like this actress. But now it's, I like this actor. And you're like, oh, who is he? And then you're like, oh, it's a she. I'm like, I get confused. So, but then when you say emperor, empress, it doesn't really matter. But it's just one of those things that it's like, I'm like, why did that get changed?
I don't know. But I felt like it was like a play on words or a play on race.
Well, I don't think it was a play. I feel like it was just... Maybe,
I don't know. When they said emperor, there was an emperor of this galaxy. I was like, oh my god, I really hope it's
her.
It's her. I was like, please God, let it
Philippa
be her.
Georgia.
And it was, and she was amazing.
Power, unlimited power.
So amazing.
Well, let's go to episode 12. Where we get to see more of her.
Oh my god.
Voting
her gloriousness. Oh my god.
Her throne
she's
room.
Amazing.
Yeah, she's pretty cool.
I just want her to be
murderous.
Evil all the time. No, granted, I loved her as a good guy.
Yeah.
But she's an amazing villain.
So, yeah, obviously we get into the heart.
So she's like as good as Harry Mudd or not quite as good as Harry Mudd?
Harry Mudd is not good. No.
I know, I'm just teasing you.
She
does not like Harry Mudd.
I wanted Harry,
need to put
I wanted Harry
David
Mudd to be
in the
emperor.
Corner.
I wanted Harry Mudd to be emperor.
He really did. He was like, what? You didn't think it was Harry Mudd? I was like, what the fuck?
Why would
I think that's Harry Mudd?
Well,
he's like,
Lorca
I don't know if he's going to be brilliant. And
he forgot
like,
his
no.
locker combination.
Lorca would want to kill him. One, two, three, four, five.
That's my luggage combination.
No.
It's unbelievable.
Well,
No.
So obviously,
no.
I was teasing
Michael
I didn't like him.
Burnham goes to the ISS Charon. We get to see this crazy starship.
Oh, what did you think of the Chinese? I mean, the Saru food.
Oh, man.
They ate some Saru.
Yeah.
What's the
some
race?
Kelpian.
The food chain is so weird on Discovery.
Yeah, Michael, you can have my...
My Kelpian.
What is the...
Ganglia.
Ganglia.
You can have my ganglia as a show of affection. And Michael eats it, and she goes, yeah, I know you're not fucking Michael. Let's get out of here. Like, gods! Like, no!
She's like,
damn it. But, yeah.
Like, could you imagine... I mean, obviously, it's different because you're thinking, like, okay, this is a different race. But you can imagine, like, you're eating something, and, like, you're in a high-stakes thing. And they're like, you know... This is your friend, you know, whoever. And you're like, you're eating it.
Oh, God. She actually didn't even say that. Like, she just, she offered it to her.
Yeah.
And then as Michael was chewing, she goes, Chef so-and-so, no one can prepare Kelpian ganglia like Chef so-and-so.
Yeah.
And Michael is like, oh, my God, do I swallow?
Yeah, you're like, oh, God, what am I eating?
And
it tastes so good.
Not moments before, she's in her quarters, and Saru is actually her servant.
Yeah.
And she names him out of affection.
She names
him
Saru.
She's like, I name you after a friend of mine, and And he's.
And yet, the funny thing is that she never tells Saru until way later.
No.
She discovers
she
it
doesn't
because.
Even tell him.
No, Emperor Giorgio tells,
yeah, tells her. Yeah,
tells him.
But she never tells him. He's like, have you seen any of my race? Like, no.
No.
Right.
Haven't seen him?
Just on the dinner table.
Mm-hmm.
Just on the dinner table.
You're, what's. What's you bathed me.
Kelpian, what's for dinner tonight?
Kelpian, the other white mate.
Yeah. Yeah. It's
or maybe slightly bluish purple, because the ganglia is like a purple.
You know, and the thing is, like, oh, God, could you imagine that happening to you and just knowing that, like, obviously she probably didn't know that Kelpian that died, but the fact that you're eating another sentient race.
Well, yeah. I can't.
I mean, it's like someone saying,
I'm having orangutan for dinner tomorrow night.
Yeah, it's like, could you imagine someone like, you know, oh, this is Robbie Palmer we're eating.
Right? Like, well, you know, we took
Robbie
you to,
Palmer in the
we took
universe.
You to the Buffalo Zoo, mm-hmm. and we introduced you to this orangutan, and its name was George.
George,
well, this is George. So, right. Bon appetit. And it's no.
I do. I'm going to admit something on this podcast for myself. So I was vegetarian for a long time, and I firmly believe that most animals are intelligent.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not, you know, obviously human intelligence, but if you're around any animals, you know. They got to figure it out. I mean, other than mm-hmm. So it's like, yes, I left that lifestyle for a lot of different reasons, but, you know, like eating beef and stuff like that. I mean, if you know cows are very intelligent animals.
They're so smart.
Yeah. They're very intelligent animals, and it's sad. And I'm not going to say I'm a hypocrite. I'm a hypocrite. I do eat them. I do eat them. So I am eating kelpian, you know, in some shape or form.
Right.
It's a hard thing.
It's funny that you mentioned that just because we talked about like kelpians are like if cows on Earth built rocket ships and tried to escape us.
Time to move on. no, but I mean it is a sad thing. So I think we treat our animals terrible, and I'm gonna get on my soapbox for a second, just for a second, because we see constantly people will be like, "Oh, can you believe they're you know these people are you know are having dogs fight or they're torturing this animal or they're treating their cats bad?
It's like, cockfighting,
all that shit." And yes, it is terrible across the board, but you're killing cows, which are just as intelligent, if not,
and not violent in any way,
and pigs. Can we talk about pigs?
Pigs are so sweet.
Pigs are extremely intelligent.
And they're used as human analogs in science stuff a lot.
So my point only being, and it's not to, you know, preach to anybody, it's because I'm a hypocrite.
I like me some bacon.
No. And I, you know, I had pulled pork just maybe a week ago or something like that. But I'm just saying it's bullshit. It's bullshit.
Yeah. People like to...
Just because it's convenient.
Hide the face of what they're eating.
Yes.
And I wasn't raised that way. We were taken to the slaughterhouses, and we were made to meet
Holly,
all of the animals.
Pick the animal you'd like to eat.
Well, no, it was like...
I don't want it, Dad!
Educational. And, you know, my mom was a vegan, and my dad was not. My dad was red meat, and more red meat.
Yeah.
You can put a sprig of rosemary on there if you want to, but...
The only thing I can say is
beyond some meat.
The only thing I can say is chicken and like most you know bird fowl, they're kind of reptilian. They're not that smart, you know.
Well,
I mean, other than a few animals,
pescatarian is like fish.
Oh, is it?
Where you're a vegetarian but you eat fish.
I could get behind that because fish are
delicious.
Well, fish are good,
yeah.
but they're also.
Ew.
No, I love fish.
I don't.
But there's not a lot going on there.
There's not a lot going on there.
I mean, they're not super intelligent, other than maybe dolphins, but they're mammals.
Yeah, dolphins aren't fish.
Yeah. But, yeah.
All right, I'm going to get off this.
Neither are Gorgamanda.
I'm sorry.
We were sidelined for a second.
I just had to get into dietary issues.
Which is great.
I've had diarrhea for the last 6 days. No, sorry.
Oh, damn it.
Are you eating your vegetables?
No.
What's a vegetable?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why you're having diarrhea.
I'm a
I'm a
carnivore. We're moving on. We're moving on.
Zero veggies ever?
We're moving on.
I'm an anti-vegetarian.
All right. Moving on. Okay, Vaulting Ambition. Fun episode. Obviously, we got to see Giorgio, and we get to see
Lorca's true colors, unfortunately.
I see your true colors shining through. You don't know the song.
Oh.
See your true colors.
And that's why I love you. All right, let's cut this part.
Baby, one more time.
Oh, Jesus. All right.
The only music he knows.
I know. I almost want to make him like... like all the songs he needs to know, you know?
Just a mixtape.
Can we just title this episode a fucking an hour long of bloopers?
Bloopers.
Because I feel like there's some discussion.
We'll call it titty bloopers.
Titubers.
All right. Let's go on to the next episode.
Okay.
Carry on my wayward son.
All right. Well, you do know that.
You do find out that Lorca is from the universe in episode 12. You do find out that Lorca is the actual Lorca from the mirror universe.
It made me cry.
And David was just heartbroken because he loved Lorca.
Don't be bad, Lorca. I love you.
And
I'll spoon you. Just don't be bad.
Michael and Giorgio team up again because... they're just destined to.
Right.
Over Lorca. That's not nice.
No, they're not destined to fuck over Lorca. They're destined to be together.
It's kinky.
They're BFFs.
Yeah, so we get... So
best
this is
friends through time continuum, so like...
Well, this one is a little strenuous, okay. But so we have episode 13, What's Past is Prologue. Yeah, like you said, we get to see Lorca in full action.
Mm-hmm.
This is a pretty kick-ass until the very end.
It's such a good episode.
It's really just like... a genuine mutiny.
It's like Die Hard.
And I have been like
in space
bitching about the fact, that Michael copped to mutiny when she didn't really cause the war. Yeah,
She took credit for it.
Stop it.
Shut up.
She attempted mutiny on, the Shenzhou. But she didn't actually start the war. If she had gone through with her plan, she might have given the Federation a chance.
Yeah.
But she did not start the war.
Yeah.
And she carries this burden of the fucking war. And it's bullshit.
It is bullshit.
And it makes me crazy.
There's a couple... it's coming back to me. There was that point I was trying to bring out is that with the fight between Cole... and Michael was the first victory I think we really felt with Michael.
Yeah.
We're like, yes, you're back in action. Let's get back in action. Let's start kicking ass and taking names.
Get back on
that
horse.
Punishing yourself and just do the
damn thing. Stop persecuting yourself.
Be Kirk. Don't be you.
Right. So, yeah, be like Kirk. So, but this is the cool thing is that we finally see that, you know, and we've always known that. You know, I mean, what context is for Kings is when we saw, I think we really see Michael shine through again. We're like, oh, this is awesome. Mm. She's a cool character. She can do a lot of things. And then you're like, and then she
falls to the wayside.
And then she's mopey again. Yeah. Oh, I killed all those people. Yes. Now they start the war. Yeah. Oh,
she
just took all this blame. She put it on herself. She admitted it in her court martial. It just... is a weird arc for your main character to be like, oh, everything's my fault.
I get
no,
it.
It's great. It's you get it.
I get it. It's just prolonged. It's too long.
It's prolonged.
She needs to find her legs a lot faster, and I wish she did because it's a TV show. But whatever. I mean, it is what it is, and I am glad.
But again, they're building rapport with you as the audience. To get you connected emotionally with this lead character.
That's the problem. I didn't feel emotionally connected at all. Like
it took me a long time to get into Michael. I didn't hate her. I just was like, would you just... All right, I get it. You fucked up. and it wasn't totally. I mean, I don't like when she tried to take over with her captain on the Shinsu with Giorgio. I didn't like. I wasn't against it, but I was sort of just like. You just kind of went about it the wrong way.
Well, it just means
yeah.
That's all it was.
We've got roughly 15 hours of Discovery, and I didn't feel anything for any of the characters at all.
That's bullshit. You like Lorca, you like Tilly, you like Stamets.
But I mean, like to the point of tears, where we watched tonight, Holly and I, we watched.
But if you watch the first episode, our first season of anything from Deep Space Nine, from TNG to any, you just don't feel anything for any of them.
I got emotional through Discovery a lot, actually.
I'll tell you the worst one was when we really get the, I mean, technically, I don't know what you want to call it, but when you do see Klingon Titty, you see the rape scene of Ash Tyler. That's when I felt bad for Ash Tyler. I forgot which episode that was.
But, I think you see it in episode 9 a little bit.
Is it 9?
But they show it twice. They show it at least twice.
They show it a couple times.
But that's when I felt like, oh, okay, so he was really fucked up. So it's more than just a little bit, you know. So
Probably before you started getting the inclination that he might be the sleeper agent.
I felt he was originally, but then I felt bad. Like, I shouldn't be just like, oh, he's going to turn. And all of a sudden I was like, oh, I feel bad for the guy. But then I stopped feeling bad.
Sure,
for
him. I like Lorca, I like Tilly, I like Stamets, but I didn't have like any feels. I didn't have like an episode like The Offspring. I wasn't moved to tears like in Brothers or in Offspring. But Holly and I watched Please Stand By Tonight, and I cried.
Oh my God.
I cried through like
so much crying.
2/3 of it. Because it's just really good, really touching. And then like Please Stand By is basically her safe word.
Mm-hmm.
It's the only thing that calms her down, and she's like telling herself that, and you start crying. Fucking sad. It's a good movie. You should, if you're a Star Trek, even if you're not a Star Trek fan, don't know why you're listening to the show if you're not a Star Trek fan
but do
yourself a favor.
It's got mental health issues. It's got the family of someone with a mental health issue. It's just beautiful.
Watch Please Stand By.
It's so beautiful.
It's so amazing.
Yeah. Well, let's move on to episode 14.
Yeah,
I haven't seen Please Stand By yet. I will see it soon.
You must.
The War Without the War Within.
Isn't this when
14.
They get back?
Yeah, they're back from the Mirror Universe.
So they make it back from the Mirror Universe.
Stamets
wakes up. Tilly wakes him up, actually, and kind of finds her power within herself. You know, she was Killy, and she was like, oh, I'm kind of just acting this.
Yeah, but it's cool that we do see that Tilly finds her legs through this episode, arc where you see where she's kind of like, she's like that awkward girl, and then she sees Killy, which she doesn't identify with, but she's like, but I could be that. I'm not that, but maybe I could be something in between.
Right.
Captain.
Yes, and then she said that she even said to Michael at some point, like, I would like to be in command.
Yeah.
So.
And that was actually, I was moved by that comment, actually, when, so Michael's training Tilly to become an officer, and they're running, and the beginning of the episode, they're running, and she's like, yeah, you've got to make this in, like, such and such time. And
right.
Tilly stops, and Michael's like, where are you? Hello?
Yeah.
Running this way. Let's go.
Right.
But then the end of the episode, you know, Michael kind of falls behind, and Tilly's like, nope, I found my own path. Mm-hmm. And she just keeps running.
Yep.
And it was like, you see Michael truly smile.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's the first time Michael was really allowing herself to have an emotion.
Have a moment
for
there,
somebody
yeah.
else.
Yeah.
And it was beautiful and I loved it.
Yeah, it was cool.
But the War Without, the War Within.
Overall thoughts on this
what?
One, on this episode.
When they come back. Mm-hmm. To our universe,
where everything is smashed,
where Hulk has smashed.
Yeah,
no,
Klingons have smash.
The Klingons have wiped out everyone's everything. They're like
9 months later.
We are fucked.
How many
babies were born?
This episode was anxiety provoking because,
I agree.
You go into a world that is vastly different than the world you left.
It's actually closer to the world they left from the Mirror Universe than it was when they originally left it.
Well, you're talking the Klingons compared to...
Not really.
The Federation's gone crazy.
Well, the Federation is on, like, on
life support.
Yeah, or damage control. They're damage like, control. We need to do anything to fix this because we are going to lose big time.
But they start to become like the Mirror Universe to do anything.
Well, we don't know that yet, but we do find that out later. You know, where they're like, let's just blow up Kronos.
So that's not what I was seeing, though. What I meant was, like, it was, I don't know, you guys kind of made me lose my thought.
No, sorry.
Sorry.
We'll do that.
I make Aaron loses all the time.
All the time. But, I mean, the cool thing about it is that without the Discovery, we find out that they are losing the fight because they never got that information from Discovery to break down their cloaking devices.
But still in 9 months, no one else figured out a way.
And it leads them to a cruel place. And, yeah, that I get that. That's kind of like where you guys went, but that's not what I was going to say.
But also we see that we see Giorgio, you know, obviously, you know, with the on the Discovery, and we get to see her view, her take on what's going on. They're like, she's sort of just like, why are you?
So I guess we didn't really talk about that. So Michael actually pulls dead Giorgio or the mirror Giorgio into our realm, our dimension.
Prime universe.
I thought that was a poor choice.
Well, I would say.
Not because Giorgio was bad. Not because of that at all.
Because sometimes two great tastes don't go together.
No, I just mean...
Like Kelsey and Inhuman.
Bacon and chocolate should not be added together. I'm sorry, people. You just don't put them together.
Well, what I mean, I don't eat bacon, so I don't know. But
we've talked about this.
Yeah. I just felt that, yes, I understand that Michael was in distress. Seeing Giorgio on the brink of death again, or for the first time, because she never really got to see Giorgio on the brink of death. Bringing Giorgio from the Mirror Universe was a mistake on one hand because, obviously, that's not her Giorgio, but on the second hand, the woman she came to respect... In the Mirror Universe, she denied her righteous death, and
she robbed her of that.
She did, and I love the martial arts, and I understand a lot of, you know, how they view death, and I just felt that her saving her from facing death really did rob her of. A noble
what she was,
existence.
What she wanted. Yeah, she felt.
And even if she did some horrible shit, she did some beautiful stuff in the last 4 hours of her life that really meant something. And Michael saving her life and robbing her of sacrificing herself. I know that sounds crazy because, you know, she lives, but it was unfair of Michael. To take that from her. And then, obviously, you know, Michael doesn't regret it, but Giorgio regrets it.
I agree in some ways because I think Michael did it out of her own emotional needs because she was like, I still want my captain back.
Right, and that's not who she saved.
Yeah, that ain't your captain. it's somebody else.
She becomes her captain again, giggity.
Which was just bizarre.
Poor choice on Starfleet's point. Yeah, point.
And Sarek's point.
Yeah.
Honestly, with the timeline, I think it's a. You could have guessed that's where they were going.
Yeah, but I mean, it's like you
only have two episodes left.
You're at your most desperate hour.
Exactly.
Let's take a genocidal serial killer and put her in control.
Exactly. And I thought. That, obviously, I don't think that's okay. but I think for the show, it was brilliant.
Yeah.
Because it made you really look at who is leading Starfleet, who is in charge of these ships.
Bunch of empty-headed bureaucrats, that's who we got.
Right, and it shows you...
Empty-headed animal, full trough wiper!
Yes, and no moral clarity. I mean, right. if they're going to go and say, let's just destroy Kronos, they're like, Well, that seems severe.
Right. And I feel like it was...
But Laurel did tell Cornwell that that's the way... It's like the war doesn't end. The war doesn't end unless you...
Right. I like it.
But the point is that you as the audience needed to see that these are decisions Starfleet could have made and probably did make, but there are the few and the proud.
The Marines!
Who are going to stand up to even Starfleet and say, no,
we ain't
you're
doing
acting a fool.
Right.
We ain't got no time for that.
That's not how we do things at Starfleet. We are about cooperation and peace and
unity.
Love and unity and pull your heads out of your asses and we're going to do this the right way. And I think it was really important for Discovery to show you this because we see the future. We see what they do after everything's been established.
And going with that thought, Holly, is that, you know, where, I mean, this is my take, is all, you know, whatever you want to watch, TV, movies, books, you tune in or you read or whatever you're doing for the hero, and the hero is supposed to be above you in some way. So, like, I always make
you're
the argument.
You're supposed to, like, aspire to be them.
Yeah, it's like, you don't read a Superman comic to think, like, Superman's going to just take the easy road.
Watch TV.
Superman's always going to, yes, he's Superman, and maybe he could just kill whoever he's going to, but he doesn't kill him. He finds a way to, imprison him into the Phantom Zone or wherever he's going to do.
Man of Steel.
bad example.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
But then also, you know, like, same thing with Batman. You know, Batman doesn't use guns, you know. He probably should have just shot the Joker a bazillion times, but he doesn't do it. So, but still on top of all that, that's why we tune in, is that when Mike, and this doesn't happen, I don't believe, in this episode, but it's the next episode where we see Michael go, no, we aren't going to do that. That plan is not happening.
Right.
We are going to, we are not going to blow up Kronos.
Will you take my hand? Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
and this stops it. And I think that's so cool the way that they took this, because they put the fate of Kronos in the Klingons' hands and Laurel's hands, to be exact. And
they gave her a bomb.
The fact that Laurel was instrumental to Michael's psychotic issues in the second half of this season, but also big part of the base religion for the Klingons.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I thought that was perfect.
It's very interesting. There's a lot. Actually, this is probably one of the more interesting wrap-ups you could possibly have, because you have so much going on. Obviously, we get a cool exposition of Kronos, of what is the Orion embassy area, right? The little township they've built around it.
Lots of strip clubs and Gorgamander vendors.
Which is cool, and it's very interesting. But also on top of it, you also get, like, the idea of that we've discussed the moral dilemma of blowing up Kronos, but also
Michael's backstory, they really should have brought out sooner, I think.
Yeah.
I felt like it was, like, too little too late, giving her full backstory in the very last episode.
I liked that they allowed Michael to be the one to stop Giorgio.
Yeah.
From actually...
Going through it.
The bomb is placed in the crust of the planet, so, like, it's there. But they give her... They wrote it so that the bomb is relinquished from Giorgio's physical signature, you know, her DNA,
her bioprint
to someone else.
Laurel's.
And Michael's like, yeah, not me. And she's like, what? And then it becomes Laurel. And it's just, like, this cool, like, and I didn't like how, like, the episode wrapped up kind of abruptly, I thought.
It did, a little abruptly in some ways.
And I
was hoping this would be, like, a 2-hour episode, because it felt like it needed more time to wrap up. And it was 45 minutes.
It was a beautiful ending. You know, the end narration was great, but it was too soon. Hmm. It was too...
forced.
It was forced.
And it was quick route. Just let's wrap this up real fast.
Yeah.
And then we get, you know, obviously them back on Earth and Sarah, you know, talking to Michael.
Your stuff's been expunged.
Yeah.
And
you're cool now.
It's cool. Peace out. I like it. Live long and prosper.
You're commander now. Again.
Yeah, it's cool.
And I liked that. And I liked Michael's speech at the end. You know, we are Starfleet. I loved that. But, you know, as far... If you look at the season as a whole, I know you guys talked a lot about how Michael... Everybody shits on Michael and everything's about her. I really don't think so. I really felt that it was about Starfleet and where they get their principles and the people that they recruit to hold up those principles.
It's interesting because that's what the writers were going for, like verbatim. Exactly what you're saying, man, how Starfleet earns its way.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's just funny that you said you don't read that stuff because you're saying like verbatim what they were kind of, what they were kind of trying to say, how they earn.
This is why people don't watch movies with me, because they call shit out and they're like, how do you know that was going to happen? Yeah, okay, right. I don't know. Right. That's cool. Well, that's cool.
Yeah, I knew that. I knew that going in. But it's just like I'm just like. But the thing I was saying was that maybe the story doesn't all hinge on Michael, but all the emotional things are hinged on Michael mostly. Like the fact that Georgia was the emperor just to give her an extra gut punch. Like it's just, and then the fact that Lorca was her lover and the mirror, her other self. Like all these things are set up to be like emotional punches for Michael because she's
eating Kelpian.
Yeah, eating Kelpian. All this stuff because she was raised as Vulcan and she's got this dichotomy between her human self and her Vulcan upbringing. Mm. I just feel like all the emotional punches were always aimed at Michael instead of having like, you know, an emotional thing for all the cast.
If it was Tilly eating Kelpian, do you think Tilly would have been happy about eating Kelpian?
Of course not. But
she thinks Saru's delicious.
I just magically
cover
delicious.
Him in barbecue sauce and
butter.
No, but I just felt like they were all pointed at Michael. I mean, we had a little bit with Culber and Stamets. But, like, most of the emotional arcs all pointed into Michael.
Of course.
To jab her. And that's why I was saying it was all about her. I just wish there was... I wish it was a more ensemble show, like Next Gen or, like, Deep Space Nine, where, like, different characters had,
we
like,
got parts of them, but we didn't get enough.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Quick break.
So we're talking about how the Federation was presented, and I was saying how you were pretty much dead on.
And I liked that. I really liked how... It was about the Federation, and you know, other shows, they talk about doing things on the behalf of the Federation, and the Prime Directive is the Federation's, you know...
Number one rule.
But, like, this was more of a backstory, not, like, a specific backstory, not, like, a history book kind of thing, but it was just an insight to... how they became who they are.
Well,
and I liked that.
Something I have thought about often is, so like during John F. Kennedy's, when he was president, before he was assassinated, a lot of the military people wanted him to, you know, obviously take out, you know, get engaged with the Russians, especially during the whole Cuban Missile Crisis, which is a fascinating time of history where we almost went to the brink of, you know, nuclear annihilation, and where he decided to part ways with his military advisors. And that's, I think, something that's very interesting is, like, while you need, obviously, tacticians and men and women who are well-versed in, you know, what you need to do to be for defense and for offense, but you also need to have the humanity too to say, like, yeah, I don't think we're going to go that way.
Yeah,
you know. And it was actually, it's amazing that, you know, Michael Burnham's character, you know, stands up to Cornwall at this point and goes, no, we're not going
to
do that.
Well, she has no right. She has nothing to lose.
And what's incredible is that, like, you know, we as humans, like, logic dictates us to do certain things. And she was a human raised in a society
full of Vulcans,
solely based on logic.
Yeah.
And
devoid of emotion.
Humanity literally dictates the entirety of what happens on the show. And it's just really cool to see that...
it shines through no matter what.
Yeah. Humanity is...
What did you think of the final scene?
Was the Enterprise showing up? Were you just like, oh, the Enterprise?
I mean, we told you it showed up.
Yeah, you guys kind of told me it showed up. So it's like, look at that kind of moment. It was just like, oh, yep.
Yeah, like me and Dave and like even Stuart from Trek Yard. We all kind of creamed our jeans. We're going like, wow, the Enterprise.
But Stuart actually like predicted it, and I was like, I'll see that.
All a little more well versed on like the chronology.
Chronology.
Yeah. Is that right?
Chronology.
Yeah. Chronology of the show. So if the Enterprise showed up, you guys probably may have.
But I mean, they also showed like the NCC 17, and it's like, we know that's the Enterprise.
Yeah,
My issue is more of just like not that I didn't think that we'd ever see it. I just was kind of surprised they pulled it out that early, you know. And that obviously it's going to play a role somehow in the second season. So which we don't know.
Maybe.
So, I mean, there's a lot of speculation, obviously, with like where you know, obviously Spock is Michael's sister. How's that work? Where's Cybok and all this?
Where's Cybok? Hashtag more Cybok.
More side by.
So, I ultimately really liked Discovery. Just out of curiosity, I don't know if this pertains to the show at all, but individually, I'm kind of curious, like, how you guys go about watching the show. Do you guys, because obviously, I didn't watch it when it aired, and I didn't watch trailers, I didn't read articles, I didn't look at pictures of behind the scenes, which I'm a behind the scene buff. Like, I want to see all of the behind the scene pictures. Mm-hmm. I want to know how everything was done.
But we couldn't show you the behind the scenes for season two.
You're not allowed. Because I haven't seen it yet. So, I'm just curious, like, I kind of know David likes to read everything he can before he watches. Is that accurate?
Yes.
Okay. So, Aaron, what is your like style of experiencing new media, like
this was an interesting I guess experiment even on myself, because obviously, you know, last one episodes that came out obviously before the movies was the Enterprise, and this podcast didn't exist then. There was no such thing as, I think, even a podcast at the time.
Maybe very fledgling, but probably not.
Yeah, very little. But, you know, I was immersed into it. I don't think I was as immersed as David. David gets into all the nuts and bolts of stuff. But I was reading up on stuff and trying to get my head around what was happening. So when we talked about it, I wasn't like, I didn't know anything.
Yeah, but I mean, like, doing a show is completely different than how it used to be. I mean, but the thing is also information's different. I mean, I know we had the internet when Enterprise was on. But I wasn't, like, scouring the internet, because I was also a lot younger, and I didn't care as much about Star Trek. I was in my rebellious Star Wars phase when Enterprise was on.
And just to go on, like, most times we would watch the episode when it came out and, like,
record an hour later.
Like, I would get my notes together that I could, like, everything I could try to figure out what was going on with the episode. We would talk about everything that was going on. So we try to, you know, serve it out as hot, you know, as hot as possible, as fast as possible. Yeah. But at the same time, we were always kind of like trying to pick up any kind of like bread trail of what else was going on.
And I mean, the year before it came out, we were like reading articles and like talking about news, because I mean, this is part of the podcast thing. It's like, if there's news about Star Trek, we want to be on it, which is why we made the joke at the beginning. It's like, we have no news right now, but tomorrow news will drop, and it'll be a week old before we can talk about it.
On top of that, we, you know, it's during that, like, the whatever the 12-month period before even the first episode of Discovery came out, we were talking about the little, you know,
we had like two speculation episodes. We had one before we even knew Discovery was going to come out, then we had another one specifically once we knew it was coming out.
So Aaron, when you watched these, when you were watching Discovery, did you have a notepad? Were you writing stuff down?
Oh, yeah.
Were you just fully enjoying the episode?
No, I was very analytical about the whole thing.
Star Trek is work now.
Because that's kind of, my friend Kaylee and I watch The Magicians, and a lot of the times, that's how I feel. I feel like
it becomes
more of a chore.
It becomes work
to write down all these thoughts that I have, and it's hard because you can't watch a show and record your thoughts at the same time as your, you know, spit out your little thoughts, because then you hear the show in the background. It just makes for poor sound quality. But
you have
it's
to,
like, it just, it kind of takes away. Do you feel like it takes away from
it? It takes away from your, the initial enjoyment. Yeah. If we had more time, it would be fine. If we could watch it once and then, you know, like watch it again a second time or something like that.
And then take
your notes on it. But the way how we wanted to get the episodes out as fast as possible, that was kind of the goal. But, you know,
it also didn't help that the show came out on the Sunday and our normal release schedule was Tuesday.
Yeah.
Like, if the show came out on a Friday, it would have been so much better. Yeah. Like, I just hate that it's a Sunday show. Like, I really hope they retool it so it's like a Friday. It's streaming. It shouldn't matter. But
well, and the issue is that Star Trek has become, you know, sort of a part-time job for us. You know, I mean, that we would sit down and, you know, easily spend 4 hours a week on Star Trek.
Right.
One way or the other. You know, so if it's watching the episode and then recording and any other background work. So it's either, you know, 4 or 5 hours a week, no matter what. So it's different. Yes. And did I enjoy Discovery? I did enjoy Discovery for a lot of reasons. There are a lot of things I take umbrage with, because it kind of blows in the face of some old canon, but it doesn't kill it for me. It sort of like, you could have shoehorned that in better.
Yeah, there's lots of ways they could have done things better. And, you know, Star Trek is work now. I don't sit down and just watch Star Trek anymore. I haven't just sat down and watched Star Trek since before we started the show. I was like almost done rewatching Voyager and Deep Space Nine before I was almost done with both of them. I was on season 6 or 7 of both shows, and then we started the show, and then it's like, well, a lot of my time went to editing, and then, you know, deciding what episode we're going to do and talking about it. But I don't mind. I mean, I'm glad I got to experience all Star Trek a whole bunch. I've seen all the episodes of everything at least 3 or 4 times, and then we watch the ones that we really love. Or sometimes if we know we want to talk about a bad episode, we'll talk about a bad one. We'll just, you know, grit our teeth through it because it's so bad. But it's a different way of watching it, but I think it's more entertaining. I like engaging my brain with it.
It is, but, you know, Discovery, I think for everything it does well, it lacks on certain things. I think there's some writing issues more than anything. And they're not terrible problems. I think they just, me and Dave have expressed this more than once. We really hope that they patch the writing issues up.
Well, hopefully there aren't any. I mean, they've already started shooting. They started shooting in April. So hopefully they're done with all the scripts, and hopefully there was no major shakeups in the writer's room. We don't know, because there was almost no news except for that season 2 was coming and that season 2 started filming. So we don't know about the shakeups yet. If there are any shakeups, we probably won't know about them until after the show's out. We had Larry Nemechek on a little over 2.5 months ago, I think, and he said there was basically 3 changes of hands with the writing during the season 1 of Discovery, which is why probably the writing was as uneven.
Yeah, we got so many changes in style and, you know, just what was happening. So, Holly, I mean, seeing all Discovery, like, you know, what is your feeling, takeaway of this new incarnation of Star Trek?
Are you excited for season 2?
Is it sort of just like, let's be cautiously optimistic, or is it, this is really great, or is this, you know, whoa, God, what are they doing?
No, I think it's really great.
Yeah?
Yeah. I think maybe at first I was cautiously optimistic. And it's kind of funny because maybe because of your guys' influence about, oh, once you get to the Harry Mudd episode, the shit's going to hit the fan and it's just going to go crazy. So maybe that kind of influenced my perspective.
Yeah, we might have tainted you a little
bit. A little.
All that talking.
But
we were just excited.
Regardless, I feel like everything was done really well. And I probably wasn't as eager to watch the next episode as I was in the beginning. Like, there were mornings when I got up and I sat here and I watched 2 or 3 episodes, and then David woke up and he's like, hey, you're watching Star Trek without me? And I'm like, well, yeah, you've seen it. And then after, you know, like the Harry Mudd episode, it was kind of like, are you ready to watch some Star Trek? And I'm like, yeah, I guess so.
That took the wind out of your sails.
Maybe.
But I have to.
That might have been psychological, though, from like, yeah, the shit's going to hit the fan and you're not going to like it anymore. So I don't know.
We bummed you out.
I'm eager to see where it goes, and I enjoyed it for what it was anyway.
What do you think, I mean, if you just, where do you think it's going to go? I mean, obviously the ship doesn't have a captain at the moment. Where do you think this is all going to head in the next, you know, second season? Any thoughts? Will we see Spock? What do you think the captain will be or will be like? Will we see Giorgio as Section 31? Will we see this four drive again?
You know, I know very little about Section 31.
Well, just the spy organization.
I think as a side plot, I think that would be super interesting.
I think it would be
too. Especially since they cut it from the show. I don't see why.
It was weird that they chose to do that.
Yeah.
It doesn't make a lot of sense.
Because maybe that was a special treat.
Yeah.
So hopefully, whether it's a side project or just a, like, do you know what I mean? Like a side, like a completely different show, like a spinoff, or if it's going to actually be a part of the show itself, I don't know. Yeah. It could definitely be its own show, but I don't know.
Do you think we'll see Spock? I'm assuming we're going to see Spock.
I don't know. They haven't given me any indication that we will.
Well, Spock is the first officer on the Enterprise at this point in time.
Right.
But maybe Spock's missing, maybe.
Yeah, shit happens. and just because we see the ship, you know, the ship could get hailed, and that might be all we see of it, or they could get orders from command where the Enterprise is leading them somewhere else, and then it takes off, and I don't know.
What do you think is the future of
the Discovery?
Discovery, but not just Discovery, but, you know, Michael's character. I mean, she obviously had some redemption by the end of the first season, and I think she faced her demons and she's kind of gotten past it, so I'm assuming she's not going to be self-tortured anymore. I mean,
I would hope not.
That's where I'm hoping we're going to see her and not be like, oh, I caused all those deaths and the war, you know?
I think that Giorgio is going to be an inspiration to her.
Inspiration? I was thinking like a devil, kind of like instead of the angel, she's going to be the devil on her shoulder.
No, I think that Michael's humanity was tied to Giorgio. And since Giorgio died, she was having a hard time reconciling her feelings and logic and making them work well together. Okay. And now that she has seen this other personality, this other Giorgio, she's going to be inspired to maybe not live the way Mirror Giorgio lived, but take charge, kick ass.
Do what she needs to do.
Exactly.
And not be, you know, hesitant.
Exactly. And that's why her mutiny failed, because she was hesitant. If she had succeeded, it wouldn't have been considered mutiny.
Yeah, but
I don't think so.
Well, that's what we talked about on part one of Holly Michelle and Discovery, that if Kirk did it,
it would be fine.
He'd be like, yeah, what? I try to stop the war. What?
But now, I've not seen every episode of Star Trek like you guys have, so I didn't know Spock had a sister.
Well, nobody knew that.
That was just a new...
We were surprised when we saw Cybok in Star Trek V, so we were like, who the hell is that? So.
But the thing is, because of Star Trek V and Cybok, Spock not talking about his extended family, there's a precedent for it. So since he never talked about his brother, he didn't talk about his sister either. So I have no issue with it, but a lot of people did.
I want to tell the listeners a secret. I don't know who Cybok is.
Ooh.
It's Spock's brother.
Spock's brother.
Who's super
mad at me right now.
Who's fully Vulcan, and he's way more emotional than Spock.
Way more emotional.
Or Michael.
How does that even compute?
Because he rides a space horse.
He's like a
Nimbus 3.
He's not logical.
He's like a space hippie.
He is a Vulcan hippie.
Yeah, he's a Vulcan hippie. Yeah.
He smokes a lot of doobs.
And well, he's like the Big Lebowski of space.
He wears the same coat. I mean, the robe
does.
Too, yeah.
Kind of does. Just missing the sunglasses, and that's about
and
it.
The White and Russians.
Yeah, the White Russians.
He doesn't do the White Russians, yeah. But...
well, we don't know. Maybe it's off screen.
So, wait, does he bowl?
Well, maybe.
Did someone steal his rug?
In the Franz Josef Tactical Manual, there was a bowling alley in the Constitution class.
Yes.
Yes, so... I don't know if the new one...
Cybok likes taking people's pain.
Yes.
That's his White Russians. Because he does take Chekhov's pain. It's a White Russian.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Bad joke.
So anyway, I don't know. As far as Michael's future, that's not something I have allowed myself to consider.
I'm just hoping she's not like all like...
Mopey again.
Yeah, let's not be emo, Michael. Let's be brash and exciting, yeah. Michael, where we see her contacts for Kings and for, what is it?
Will you take my hand?
Will you take my hand and stuff like that, where you're like, yeah, I think
Mira Giorgio is going to have a
parental
role way of like inspiration. I think she'll be inspirational to Michael because Michael doesn't disagree with her motives. She just understands that it's not
the way.
The way.
Yeah.
So I think it's going to give her balls back and she's going to
go like, yeah, I'll be like, yeah, I don't agree with you, but I take a good point for what you're saying.
Right.
Yeah.
You know,
so I hope.
Yeah.
That's all I get from at least the future I see.
Mm-hmm.
I don't particularly know that I think... I don't really... I haven't allowed myself to think
that
Enterprise is going to have any kind of role.
Well,
I really don't think it is. But if it does, hey, that's cool.
I mean, why show it if it's not going to have a role?
My only issue is more... There's a couple of thoughts I have. Like, okay, so like Enterprise comes... Either it's Search for Spock 2...
The prequel.
Like maybe they are, something happened to Spock.
That's how he got lost.
He got lost, yes. Or maybe it's reconciliation between brother and sister.
Maybe. But why would they focus on that if we've never heard of her beforehand?
Well, maybe there's something to be said there, and there's a story to be told there. I hope they don't make Spock out like a complete dick. You know, yeah. I mean, Spock's, you know, obviously tries to purge himself of emotion, obviously, because that you know, we know his character, and I'm hoping that we get a good rendition of Spock. So
yeah.
There's a lot of things to think about where Spock could land in this story.
Yeah.
And writers, I don't know if... This is the thing with Discovery for me, is I don't know if they totally get Star Trek. I think parts of them do, but a lot of them don't. Like, yeah. I think they get, like, bits, and then they screw up, like, some of the essence of some of the things. So... That's the part I'm worried about, you know, and I'm constantly worried with Discovery. I think they strayed a couple times with Discovery where it should be. And it doesn't have anything to do with canon. I think the only time they really redeem themselves is where we get to the very end is where, you know, Michael says we aren't going to commit genocide. So, you know.
Well, maybe Discovery is supposed to be a short-lived series and maybe Michael's going to die. And it's going to have become an important part as to Spock's issues.
Mm.
And
that's a thought.
That might be a good...
Well, one of my original thoughts is by the end of the show, Michael's going to die.
Well, like, most definitely.
Even back before the show even aired its first episode, I'm like, Michael's... Because they pitched her as Spock's sister, so I'm like, she's probably going to die. Before the series, she'll die in the series finale. Discovery will go down because no one knows about the Spore Drive. Like everything has got to go wrong with this ship and this show and this crew. Everything's got to go wrong for continuity to be continuity, or they get lost in space.
I always figured it was going to be a lost in space kind of issue.
Like, you know, they could do lots of different things with it. So that's kind of where I was thinking.
Well, I guess we'll find out. Yeah. But, I, you know, It is interesting looking back, and you know how you brought up a lot of
points we didn't touch on or think about.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of little things that little nuances that I was like, oh, I didn't think about that, or you know, there's so it's cool seeing a different perspective, especially if you. Obviously, we fed you some bullshit. Watch, you know, coming into it.
Well, because but, we fed you what we thought. You know.
But
you tried not to.
Tried not to, but we, you know, exceeded things, there were things truer.
We were just excited for you to see the second half. Because things dynamically changed. That's why we said it went crazy. Because things, it is a total paradigm shift from, you know, starting episode 9 going forward.
But that being said, you didn't read, you know, any back articles. You didn't hear a ton of stuff that we said beforehand. Right. So. And you didn't listen to all the hype, so you watched it and you got to see it. Almost
it is a genuine, like
yeah, just a reaction, random, just like yeah. You're just like, okay, there's that, you know,
there's that.
Where our reactions were clouded by news we read and stuff we talked about.
And theories. Dave, you had a ton of problems reconciling with a ton of hype that came out, you know, by producers and people saying this or that, and then
it made me angry because I felt like it was a bait and switch.
And some of it was. But it doesn't take away that the show does have merits.
No, I mean, the show's good. I have no issue and overall with the show because I do enjoy the show. I just have issue with, like, I have issue with how they pitched it. Mm-hmm. Because the show is great. I really enjoyed the show. I have issues with how they pitched it because if they pitched it, they could have pitched it accurately. This is a story that's with the background of a Klingon war. That's accurate because the Klingon War's happening in the background, but we can't tell you what's happening in the story. But there is a war, and it's happening in the background.
But it is misleading.
That was why I was upset.
Yeah,
I made the reference of Casablanca in the past. You know, like Casablanca takes place during World War II, but we don't really see World War II. Really, we just know that's happening during that time period.
Because I mean, if they would have pitched it like Casablanca, it would have been fantastic. Because it kind of is. There's a love story in there.
Well, and there's more war.
There's a little bit more war, but there's not a lot.
Less piano playing.
Less piano playing. more Klingon titties.
Yeah, we don't see that. At Casablanca.
We really only briefly touched on the Klingon titties, and I'm so thankful.
I was trying to be good.
He got it all out in the beginning.
Yeah, I was trying to scare you guys. Oh.
I was about to make a really bad sex joke.
We drew you in with the titties, but we just left you feeling
saggy.
Dissatisfied? They got it over too soon is what I was getting.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We're like, oh.
Two strokes and done.
I'm done.
Basically.
See you later.
And the rest of us girls are like, okay, what? It's been 2 hours?
What? This is too... Wait, that was not even a minute.
Oh, I don't have one of those.
All right. Yet. Well, anyways, yet. So, and let's do any parting thoughts with Discovery. Season one. Goodbye, season one. What do we have to say about you? It was a great time.
So long, and thanks for all the fish.
Yeah, there you go.
So glad you had to come to this.
Yeah, any ideas? Just no, you know, like you enjoyed it.
I did.
There's good things. Mm-hmm. There's confusing things, mm-hmm. and there's a few bad things.
Yeah,
that's kind of where I'm at too. Yeah. There's okay. You know, Dave was disappointed on a couple things because they pitched it differently and they said a lot of things that were half truths, if not complete lies.
Yes. I just want to see some dual ship action in season two.
Wants to see more Klingon titties.
Titties.
Hopefully with less prosthetics on them.
Maybe less Klingon titties more just like titties.
More like Orion titties.
Yeah, you're about the green women.
I like them green.
I like them green, if you know what I mean.
Oh, I could take some Andorians, too. That's fine. And
yeah.
Just no Tellarites, please. They'll have six otters apiece.
Six otters. It's got huge tracts of land. Well,
all right.
There's just something weird about going from calling them titties to udders.
Udders.
Well, Tellarites are pigs, so.
I'm just saying that just takes it from one level to a completely
different level. Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Yes. Well, I was trying to because Tellarites are not, they are on a different plane.
Yeah,
they're Tellarite.
They kind of like, they're kind of like,
tell her right.
Pig, they don't tell
pig
her
people. No, they
I don't
want
to tell her right.
They a bunch of liars.
They're assholes.
They tell it wrong.
They're assholes. They're ugly assholes.
They're ugly assholes.
They don't like my jokes.
No.
Huh? What?
Yeah. What?
Well, our music is provided by Warp 11. You can find them at warp11.com or Warp 11 on Twitter. The show you can find at Synthaholics.com or Synthaholics at Yahoo.com. And on Twitter, you can find us at Synthaholic Duo. And David's at David_J_Duncan. Holly's at Lunar Thistle. And Aaron is at Blackbird 2004.
Absolutely. And hey, if you can go on to Apple iTunes, rate and review us, give us 5 stars preferably, and leave a nice comment. That helps to get seen through the Apple iTunes algorithms. And if you can give us money, please go to our Patreon /Synthaholics. Throw us $1 a month. That's not much to ask. You probably spend more of that on coffee and hamburgers during the day. So
moving on.
My coffee itself is over $3.
Yeah.
Depending on my mood.
Yeah. It's how much caffeine you need.
Well, I get decaf stuff.
What?
Yeah.
Get out of
I
town.
I got anxiety, so.
You get too much and you get like,
Oh, it's crazy. But yeah.
Jittery like Jim Carrey on
if I want sugar or not. If I want sugar, it's like $6. If I don't want sugar, it's like $3.53.
Well.
That's impressive coffee. I don't drink
so
coffee.
So, Holly.
Yeah.
That being said, if you had money to throw our way to go into the Patreon, $1 a month is not a lot to ask, and that
so
helps
not.
Grease the immense wheels of the podcast that is rolling towards you every week to give you all this content and all this witty banter.
These
and
guys are so witty.
Witty.
Like, you have no idea.
You didn't hear the stuff we talk about before the show.
Now, perverse at times, yes.
Yes, we are.
I'm looking to my left.
That's Aaron over there.
No! And,
I can't, I never learned the difference between right and left.
And if you don't do Apple iTunes, and if you don't do Patreon, another wonderful way to support the show is word of mouth. Please tell a friend. Tell your family member, tell a coworker, anybody you know that could be like, hey, you like Star Trek, you like sci-fi, you like offbeat humor, titty jokes.
Titty
jokes.
Yeah. And like, honestly, like I'm not a synthaholic.
Yes, you are now.
I think you are.
Now you are.
But you know,
we're gonna give you a uniform.
Oh yeah.
Very short.
I will not
very
no.
drunk.
No. Make me a pantsuit.
It's like a Star Trek dress. They're
pant
short.
Pantsuit. I'll
Star
do
Trek
that.
Dress.
I'll do pantsuit, but I'm
pant
not
suit?
Doing,
no,
I'm
no.
doing a
Star Trek uniform.
What it, no, what happens is it has two tubes, and they go up to your mouth, and they give you alcohol
okay.
through your bones.
I'm kind of signed up for this already.
Yes, it's
what
all
is
it
the
is.
Rest of it?
It doesn't, it. It doesn't matter.
Oh.
It could be a dress. It could be lead shoes. I don't care.
I don't know how I feel about signing up for this.
Yes,
because I'm like, yes, alcohol tubes. Okay.
Alcohol tubes.
But what is covered? And that's
if you put the bottles in front of your nipples, that's all you need, right?
I can
all
wear
you
the
really
bottles
need.
On my nips.
Yeah.
Do I get to wear pants?
The beer cans. People will be like, nice can.
Nice. You can wear
oh
a slice
God.
Of pizza in front of you.
If I go
a
to
pizza
LA
loincloth.
And
LA
I decide to wear this,
this
fabricated.
They'll be like,
they're
going to
go, bravo.
You are
bravo.
And I'm going to be like, you have no idea.
I'm like, I'm a synthaholic.
I'll give them synthaholic business cards.
I'm yes. a synthaholic, you asshole.
It'll be great.
You'll get so many listeners dressing like that.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well.
Right.
But, you know.
I'm wearing pants.
Pants.
I ain't wearing booty shorts or crotch.
Well, I'll wear those for you, Holly.
You can wear booty shorts for me?
Well.
Okay.
Well, I've been offered to go topless for you since you didn't want to do it last
I've
time.
I've offered way back in episode, whatever, 10
to run naked
through the woods.
For our Patreon, and yeah. we have not gotten any
nobody's
on that
ever asked for that,
what?
So.
You silly patrons.
And, yes. and speaking of Patreon, Holly is part of Nerdonomicon. They also have a Patreon, so you can check them out as well. Support our friends there.
Yeah.
Right.
But what I was going to say was like, you know, even though there's Patreon and there's Apple iTunes and like the iTunes is actually really important regardless, like you don't have to pay anything, like you rate and it really just helps everybody out. But really, just being vocal with us, like, would be so much fun.
Yeah, we still need
really
some
really great.
Still need some more words on that Mad Lib.
Yeah. Yeah.
I kind of wrote that off.
Yeah, I feel like if it doesn't happen, it's not going to happen.
We'll fill out the rest of the words because we've got some good words on there. I like.
Well, no matter what, Holly's right. The group is a great. We do have some great people coming in, and they obviously chime in for different things, and we discuss all sorts of things from silly things to what's
to
going
super
on.
Serious.
Yeah. But it's great to have that. And if you want to join the group.
Yes, Facebook.com/group/Synthaholics.
There you go.
Yeah. And like it's more rewarding to hear that you guys listen by your comments on the Facebook page.
Just say some stupid shit
just
that you're like.
Something stupid or like, hey, Synthaholics. You don't have to say, hey, I'm listening to Synthaholics. Hashtag Synthaholic Duo. But like.
I mean, we did get a new listener last week.
Yeah,
who,
that was
who,
awesome,
who chimed
actually.
In. It was really, really nice.
That's not. I completely forgot about that. But I just mean that like.
I showed off
it
your
tweet.
It would
be really cool for you guys to like talk with them and like.
Yeah, Matt Price on Twitter.
Make little. Hey, Matt.
Hey, Matt.
Hey. I'm glad you're enjoying us from Europe.
Yeah.
Some part of Europe.
Yeah, I think we looked at him. He was from, yeah. But we shouldn't like give him his address.
Well, let's not.
don't dox him.
Just no, saying. But not America.
No, not America. It's nice to have a new listener. We're really glad you enjoyed our last episode. We hope you enjoyed this one, too, even though we rambled quite a bit.
Rambled a lot. Sorry about that.
Two Long Islands. 10 shots of booze.
Next episode, we will be talking more, like Dave said, it'll be Nickel City.
It'll be, like, crowd. You'll hear the background noise, and I'll be asking people what they thought of Season 1 of Discovery and what their hopes and dreams are for Season 2, like we asked Holly just now.
Yeah. Absolutely. I really don't have any hopes and dreams, but, you know.
What's your aspirations? To be
admiral, for the show?
To be admiral.
I want to be the computer.
Oh.
I want to voice the computer. How's that?
Hell yes.
That's an aspiration
right there. Yes, please.
Yes, please.
I want some Holly in Star Trek.
HollyMichelle.wixsite/voiceover.
Yeah.
Wixsite.com/voiceover? Yeah. Yeah, that's the one.
I got to start my voiceover thing, too. I'm trying to get tutored by Holly.
Find me.
Yeah,
hire
find
me.
Her. Hire her. She's good at what she does.
Does.
Well, thank you all so much for listening. Thank you, Holly, for joining us and giving us your thoughts on Discovery, the second half, part two.
Yes.
You're welcome.
That's her computer voice.
You are welcome.
Say bananas.
Bananas.
Say titty.
No!
Titties.
Titties.
Oh, that's great. I'm hiring you. I could listen to that all night. But thank you so much for listening. Live long and prosper, one and all.
One and all. Before the night's over, I'll puke in the sink and we'll cry till we laugh. And we'll both shit our pants. You're the best drinking friend I ever had.
Titties and all.
Titties and all.
I gotta go home.
Yeah. How was that Long Island?
It's good. And at one point I was like, what am I talking about? I was really talking and I was like, oh shit, I'm talking on a podcast.